about.
So easy. You gotta put it in perspective.
I've never felt so good in my life. It feels so good. It feels so good to be alive.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy.
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
But I have a question. Mm-hmm. You know, the man who's on to catch a predator? Well, occasionally he baits people who call in. People who are lonely or autistic. You know, they only go on the internet for company or to learn something. I think that's very wrong, and nobody talks about it.
That's not really a question.
I think it is.
And now.
Hey, I hear you get up very early down on that farm of yours.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, 5 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
That's a.m.
Mm-hmm.
How come you get up so early?
Our feature presentation.
That is a very good question.
Yeah, I've been asking myself that one a long time.
And asked by who, by the way? What was that from? That's the most bizarre thing I've ever heard.
Some old-time radio thing. I don't remember. I don't remember where I got it. Hey, party people. Welcome on in to another show. It is Wednesday today. How's everybody doing?
Good.
I couldn't stay up to watch the end of the game last night. Did you watch it, Kevin?
I did not, no.
Thunder won. Heard an interesting statistic yesterday. NBA Finals, Game 1 last night. It's the Thunder versus the Heat. I heard an interesting statistic. I guess, I think it was Sports Illustrated or ESPN did a poll, nationwide poll, on who people are rooting for. Which team are people rooting for? Because they always like to, you know, see whether there's some kind of national appeal. You know, you don't have your big cities in it this year. You know, they always love it when you get a Chicago or you get a New York, you get an LA or somebody like that in the playoffs because it's great for the ratings. Who are people rooting for, do you think, across the country? Thunder versus Heat.
I think the Thunder.
I would guess they're voting, they're rooting against Miami.
Yes.
That is correct. 48 states are rooting for Oklahoma City.
Wow.
48. And you can easily figure out the two that are rooting for Miami. Florida is one of them.
Yeah. Sure.
Washington State is the other. Because Washington State lost the Sonics, who became the Thunder. So apparently in Washington, they're rooting against Oklahoma City because they're the Sonics.
That's fine.
How hilarious is that?
It's not surprising, but what's really weird is usually if a team has the arguably the best player in basketball,
mm-hmm.
usually a lot of people just like to watch that guy play and you root
right.
for him and stuff, but he's mm-hmm. so screwed himself up with all that PR.
He's so beloved and now so not.
Beloved.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this yesterday. And by the way, best player in basketball is to be debated. But a lot of people are going to say if Kevin Durant continues to play like he did last night, that he's the best player in basketball and LeBron's number two. The way he's going. But is there any kind of statute of limitations for LeBron James where he kind of wins back the favor of the fans by just being great? I mean, look, there have been low times in the popularity of Kobe Bryant in the past. But
sure.
He's, you know, for a lot of people, he's come past that. He's paid his dues or whatever and moved on.
But,
and then people give him another chance, but not with LeBron.
Yeah. You know what? Kobe made a lot of enemies that are still enemies. I mean, I think people, once they get in their mind, this is who this person is,
mm-hmm.
and I don't like him. I don't think mm-hmm. there's much way to get that back.
Isn't that interesting?
I don't think so. I mean, unless...
Years can go by. You can, I mean, you know, by all accounts, he's been a model citizen in Miami. He's been playing team basketball. You know, he hasn't been saying and doing dumb things. You just hold it against him forever, I guess.
I think you just, most of the time that you watch guys like that, you think, I don't really know who that person is. But there's every once in a while something comes up where you go, okay, that shows me a little bit who he really is. And mm-hmm. then I don't know how you get that back unless you do press and tell
and he's
people.
Doing wonderful charity work.
Yeah,
and
you admit what a disaster that was.
Right.
And, I mean, that kind of stuff goes a long way. But
look, I'm no LeBron defender. I mean, I thought he was a dick too, the way he handled a lot of things, and has been since high school. But you know, he could point out, you know, as much as we all reviled that Decision TV show. I mean, it made $3 million for charity by doing the show. I mean, that's what he did. That's one of the reasons he said he wanted to do it was to raise a ton of money fast for charity. So, I mean. I think there's two sides to every coin.
I do too.
Still, but, I don't want him to win.
Still, I wasn't.
Still, I don't want him to win.
I wasn't sad to see them lose last night. It is a shame, though, when, you know, and you can find these in every sport. You can find great baseball players who never won a World Series, great football
sure.
players who never won never won a Super Bowl. It is weird to think about a guy like LeBron James if he ends up going his whole career and never winning a finals. It would be, you know, just something about that just didn't seem right, a player that good, right?
Right. You would think he would win at least one
yeah.
right.
in his career at some point.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be very entertaining series. It was a real good game last night. I'll tell you that. I enjoyed it.
Let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
I don't think I'd like it.
I think you will. We have a Doto sighting.
Oh, I can't wait.
We had to bump this guy yesterday, but he had not just a momentary sighting. I mean, he spent an afternoon with Doto, and it's just as amazing. When people meet Doto, here's what we hear. I thought you guys were making him up. I thought he was a Ralph voice. I can't believe that dude is real. I can't believe he's everything you say he is.
I wish we were that good.
Yeah, no one could make up Doto.
Oh, my God. This is going to be great. I can't wait. And we got to get the international mystery, man of mystery himself on the program soon.
Yes, we do. Now that he's back in America. Why not, Kevin and Bean?
This is America. Last Family on Earth is the name of a new TV show, and you could actually try out for it if you want to be part of the family. It's a family show, and you can win an underground bunker.
Yes, please.
It's an awesome bunker, right? It's really cool.
Supposedly,
it's not just, like a cement thing.
I don't know what sets apart an awesome bunker versus a...
I don't know. Wired for everything?
Wired for
internet, I think Lisa's talking about it being the type of place you could live in for a long time rather than just a shelter to hold it, you know, to kind of hole up in the event of an attack or something. That's one of the things I'm excited about finding out is what am I playing for when I get on this show?
Bean is so going to try.
I'm so going to try.
Yeah.
I tried a few years ago to get Donna to go with me up to Blaine, Washington, which is on the border. It's directly just south of the border into British Columbia. And there's a guy up there who's selling a six-story underground house.
Awesome.
Six stories.
Wow.
And, you know, reinforced for everything. And I said, please, we have to go look at it. And she wouldn't even go look at it, much less let me talk her into buying
it. She was afraid to death what you would do.
Sure.
I was going to buy it. That's what I was going to do.
You're going to buy it and then bury her there.
I was so excited.
What would you do with that? You're not going to live there.
Yes, I would live in it.
No,
I would live underground like the mole people.
You
yes, I would.
Live underground.
Yes, I would.
His little eyes would get all little.
It's my dream. My dream. My dream is to be a mole people.
A mole person?
No, I want to be a mole people.
We're going to talk about wedding disasters today. There's a story in the news of a bride that got punched, and that's funny. Aww. I mean, let's face it. At a wedding, what could go worse?
Expect?
What could go worse than the bride getting punched?
Yes.
Yeah.
That seems bad. Skateboarding legend Christian Hosoi will be coming in today.
How about that?
Got a brand new book talking about how he was at the top of his game when he was fighting Tony Hawk for supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up doing drugs, ended up in jail, came out a preacher.
Wow.
So all that happened.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so we're going to talk to him coming up.
Let this be a lesson to you kids.
In the studio. We have, thanks for that tweet, Bean, on the program
today.
Oh,
come on with that.
Yep. We have a brand new scientific survey on the way, and we have from the Los Angeles Kings, Luke Robitaille.
Oh, very
on today's
cool.
Kevin and Bean Show.
Think he slept in the last 2 days?
Nope. Talking about winning the cup and the parade that's tomorrow and all the details on that. So we've got that coming up as well. We'll take a quick break, and we will come back with the Showbiz Beat next. 106.4.
Hold on really?
A second. Sorry,
Hello. Why would you put a giant gumball in your mouth before you start speaking?
I thought I could get it soft before I started talking. I thought it would be easier for me.
I think soft is your head.
106.7. K-Rock is KROQ. It's Kevin and Bean Show. It's 549.
That's a level of professionalism on this program that is astonishing.
That's
to listeners and participants alone.
Yeah.
Ralph is here, however, with the Showbiz Beat to get us out of the gutter. What's going on, Ralph?
Before I get to Showbiz News, I've got some tickets to give away to a little movie that I like to call Ted.
Yay!
Why do you like to call it that, Ralph?
Well, it's because that's what they titled it.
I see.
Yeah. I get a pair of passes to the K-Rock advance screening of Ted at the AMC Burbank on Tuesday, June the 26th. I like this movie so much, I'm going to stop by and say hi to everybody who comes out to the screening.
Wow.
Because this movie means a lot to me. I have a little role in this film, and it's done by Seth MacFarlane, my buddy from Family Guy. Seth's great because he cast a lot of us who work with him on Family Guy in the film. Alex Borstein, who plays Lois on Family Guy, plays his little role as my wife in the film. And almost everybody from the show makes an appearance. And we're very excited about the film. Ted opens in theaters everywhere Friday, June the 29th. But if you'd like to see it a little bit early, on the 26th, on Tuesday, at our special advance screening, first two callers right now at 1-800-520-1067. First two callers to get through, we'll get a pair of passes to come join me to our advance screening of Ted. He's a talking bear.
Mm-hmm. He is.
So funny.
Seth's a genius.
I love the continuation they do of the premise, which is Mark Wahlberg's character, when he's seven, makes a Christmas wish that he has no friends, so he wishes his teddy bear could be his real-life best friend. And because, you know, nothing's more powerful than a child's wish on Christmas. It happens.
Right.
And then they flash forward 30 years, and they're both just losers who smoke pot and sit on the couch and watch television
the
all day.
The teddy bear is too.
And the teddy bear is too. And the teddy bear, when he came to life 30 years ago, was a huge celebrity. He was like doing the Johnny Carson show, and he was on all the covers of the magazine. I mean, a bear, you know, a live stuffed animal, as you can imagine.
Oh, so it's not just.
Got a lot of attention. It's not like it's a secret or anything. Everybody knows about
Ted. I didn't know if it was just in Mark Wahlberg could only see him.
No, it's this, this bear comes to life.
Fantastic.
And he becomes this massive media star. But like all massive media stars, he's a flash in the pan. And now 30 years, people like see him in the street and like, aren't you? Didn't you used to be that bear? You can tell. It's like, yeah, yeah, that's me. He's like Gary Coleman walking around.
No.
Very, very, very funny concept. I mean, he's like alive.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. That's
the difference.
Yeah. Right. Let's take a look at today's showbiz news. Congratulations to Allison Hannigan, our buddy. She finally welcomed her little baby into the world.
She's the best.
She is the best. Although she's not really good at naming children.
Oh, fantastic. She did it right?
You know we love Allison.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband, Alexis Denisov, is a very talented guy and a very, very nice guy from all accounts. But their first baby girl was Satyana, which, okay, Alexis Denisov, maybe he's got some, you know, yep. Russian family. It makes sense.
Sure.
But then shouldn't Allison get the second one? Shouldn't she be able to step in? One for you, one for me?
Yeah, exactly.
Did they go with
Ryan Gosling?
Ryan Gosling.
That's
Denisov.
Odd.
Yes. No, her Satyana's baby sister is named Kiva.
Kiva?
K-E-E-V-A.
Well, at least you'll know how to say it.
Kiva. Kiva Jane.
All right.
Good work, Allison.
Kiva. Kiva sounds like a new brand of sports shoe.
The new Kiva. When you're running long distances, Kiva keeps your feet in shape. Is your car old and running out of life? Get the new Kiva.
Oh, man. David Arquette. He's a piece of work. I told you earlier this week that he was a man. He was bar mitzvahed.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's a divorced man. It's officially over between the two of them. He filed for divorce on their 13th wedding anniversary. Oh, what a romantic.
He actually waited for the date?
I don't know if he waited for the date or just worked out that way, but that's when the filing happened.
That would be odd.
Yeah.
Haven't they been separated like 2 years, Ralph?
They have been separated for a while, yeah. But they were very much involved in each other's lives and dealing with the kids. They didn't even hire an attorney, by the way, for this. So apparently they are one of those amicable divorces you hear about, but they are separating for good. And I'm surprised David was the one who filed. Because don't you think Courtney's the one who says, oh, enough of this man-child.
Second, yeah.
I got to move on. More news about Lidlern and a Porsche accident. TMZ.com is reporting that a plastic water bottle filled with alcohol was found in the trunk of the rented Porsche when she crashed it into that semi on the PCH last Friday.
Plastic bottle?
Yeah.
That's low rent.
That's how I used to sneak margaritas into a Jimmy Buffett concert. The cops who confiscated the bottle say neither driver was impaired in the accident. So apparently Lindsay wasn't loaded.
How did they know, though? Didn't she leave?
They took her to the hospital.
Yeah, they took her to the
hospital. Okay, so she was all banged up there.
But
that's weird.
The question remains, whose bottle was it? And if it was Lindsay's, why is she driving around with a plastic bottle full of booze?
Because she loves to walk around with her bottle of water like I'm not drinking.
She isn't drinking, Lisa. She is sober.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Anyway, I think we haven't heard the last from this story.
Yeah, I don't think so
either. There's so many weird turns.
There's more to
come. Yesterday, Ralph, weren't they saying that Lindsay claimed her assistant was driving and her assistant said, no, Lindsay was driving? I mean, that's the type of thing that really gets you in trouble. You start lying to the police. The
problem is that Lindsay is still on probation, and lying to the police officer while under probation is a violation of that probation.
Oh, man.
So if
she's
lying. If they want to put her feet to the fire, she could technically go back to jail because she didn't say the truth when the police first interviewed her about who was driving
her. She is the worst.
She's just crazy.
She can't get out of her own way, that's for sure.
How about those people making this movie who knew they were taking on a tremendous risk with Lindsay? Every single day they have to just be praying that she shows up for work on time and sober.
Yeah, just to get through the shoot, let alone whatever kind of performance they can give, just to complete the film is going to be a challenge. Nuts. Yesterday, the battle between CBS and ABC continued when CBS dropped off yet another filing in federal court to try to get ABC from premiering its upcoming reality show, Glass House, which CBS says is a blatant ripoff of Big Brother. If the suit succeeds, the court will be issuing a restraining order against the network, which will stop the debut of the TV show next Monday.
Most of the time, this stuff is too complex for most of, you know, we don't have enough information to really make a good guess. And this particular one, you can kind of just look at it and go, wow, this is really, really...
On every level, it's a ripoff.
It looks like it, yeah.
Not to mention, there's like 19 employees that they took from Big Brother that they have on the staff of the show. I mean, the employees were hired with specifically for their knowledge of the Big Brother show when they went to work for ABC.
So. And they actually bought the cameras that they used to use.
In fact, if you look closely at the house, the Big Brother house, the glass house, it says Big Brother on the outside. There's a big line drawn through, and they just somebody with magic marker wrote glass house underneath it. So I'm just saying, it's very, very close. Here's the problem for CBS. The judge hasn't even set a hearing for the case yet. The show debuts on Monday. So if they don't get to it this week, the whole thing could be academic. It really could. It could
so
be pointless.
They can or cannot air it until something moves on this?
Oh, they can. There has to be a restraining order put in place that would stop them from airing it. If no such order is handed down by the judge, then they're free to air it on Monday.
Interesting.
So, it sounds like CBS was a little late to the game in getting their paperwork in on this one. So we'll have to wait and see. Sad news. Denise Richards and Richie Sambora are no longer dating. Oh, they made such a lovely couple. Word is they got into an epic argument before the Country Music Television Music Awards, CMT?
Yeah,
CMT
that's right.
Awards?
Those are the ones that were just on this weekend, yeah.
Yeah.
He wanted to watch them, and she said, no, it's a deal breaker.
People overheard them a screaming fit at the Hermitage Hotel in Music City. Just overheard screaming obscenities at each other at the top of their lungs,
oh
and
my
apparently
God.
This was the straw that broke the camel's back. Yeah, that's what it was, Kevin. I'm not going to the damn CMT Awards.
Yes, you are. You know it's country.
It's a red carpet, and we're going.
You know who hosted the awards this year, by the way?
I couldn't tell you.
Nope.
Kristen Bell.
What?
Is there nothing she can't do?
Nope.
There's nothing she'll say no to?
Well, that too.
Yeah. And Andy Samberg, who's leaving Saturday Night Live, he's got a new job. I thought this was fascinating. He's doing a sitcom, but for the BBC.
What?
Going overseas to work.
That's weird.
Hollywood Trade say he'll star in a show called Cuckoo, playing a slacker goofball and self-described spiritual ninja who has just married a British girl and is moving into her parents' house. So apparently he's a slacker and she's British and they move in with her parents.
We don't hear all that often about American stars going over to British TV. It's usually the other way around.
I think Matt LeBlanc did it for episodes because that was a British show, I think, before it was shown here in America. But very rarely do you hear especially hot talents going over to England.
Gillian Anderson did it, of course, famously. Pretty much went over there, and that's all she does now is British television.
Well, she married a Brit.
Right.
Right. And that's
and
Elizabeth
and she's
McGovern,
British.
Too.
Did you know she's British?
No, I didn't know she was British.
Mm-hmm. Gillian Anderson's British.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it's like going home for her.
Huh.
Yeah.
Andy Samberg is going to be joining us Friday on the Kevin and Bean Show, by the way.
What?
Really?
He's fantastic. Too big a star for us.
I know.
He really is slumming. He's going to work for the BBC, and he's going to be on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Yeah.
Yep.
A lot of these people say yes before they realize what the pitch is.
His career is over. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthday. Siegfried of Siegfried and Roy.
Face or no face?
He is face.
Face.
He is 73 years old today. Actor Malcolm McDowell, famous for, of course, many roles, Clockwork Orange being among them. He's the man who killed Kirk. In the Star Trek movies?
Mm-hmm. Not ringing a bell, but go ahead.
69 years old. Tim Allen from Home Improvement, of course, is 59. Ally Sheedy is 50. TV anchor and professional Pat Benatar impersonator Hannah Storm is 50 years old today. Smash Mouth is 49. Rivers Cuomo celebrates his 42nd birthday. Steve-O is 38. Actor Chris Evans, Captain America, is 31. Ashley and Mary-Kate Olsen celebrate their 26th birthday. And Kat Dennings is 26 as well. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
7 o'clock this morning, Luke Robitaille in the front office. What is he, manager of business operations or something like that?
He's got some fancy title. Who knows?
He is going to be joining us on the air to talk about what an unbelievable couple of days the Los Angeles Kings have had. And then Christian Hosoi joins us in studio next hour, too. His new book, My Life as a Skateboarder, Junkie, Inmate, Pastor. That old story again. Right now, though, it's time for a Kevin and Bean Scientific Survey.
It's time for Kevin and Bean Scientific Survey.
I like that that piece right there says exactly what you say.
Yes, exactly. That's useful.
Yes.
Here's what we decided to do, because we found out we're smart and we know math and stuff. We found out that you can ask any five random people something and you will get a consensus that that correlates to the entire world. So if five people say it's true and they're random, then it's true, right? That's the conclusion we came to.
Yes.
It's time for Kevin and Bean's Scientific Survey.
So we have five random people on the phone right now. They do not know why they are calling. Hey, what happened? We just lost a couple people. We have room for a couple of more random people at 1-800-520-1067. We have random people on the phone, and then we ask a question. We go to those people and see what their opinion is, and then we extrapolate. So here's what the topic is today, Kevin.
It's time for Kevin and Bean's scientific survey.
What do we know about a guy whose Twitter or Facebook photograph, his avatar, is him without a shirt on?
Oh, seriously.
What do we know about that guy? We don't know anything else about that guy. This is a stranger to you, but you are on Twitter and you see somebody whose avatar is him with no shirt on. What conclusions can we draw about that guy?
Now, I've seen some where they do it for comedy's sake.
Right. Mm-hmm. But this isn't for comedy, right?
I don't believe so.
I don't believe so either. So that's the topic on the table at 1-800-520-1067. Sean is random caller number one. Sean was on hold before we asked the question, so let's see what he thinks. Sean, good morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do we know about a guy who has a picture of himself without a shirt as his Twitter avatar?
Douchebag.
Douchebag.
Douchebag. Okay. All right. That's what I was thinking, too, but I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to influence anybody. Thank you for the call. Christina is up next. She's on line two. Christina, what do you think? What are your thoughts when you see a Twitter avatar with a guy with no shirt?
I'm sorry, are you there?
Christina.
Oh. Sorry. Hi. I'm here.
Right. Try to keep up.
What do you know about that guy?
Asshat.
Okay. Asshat. All right. Good.
Good.
All right, let's get Jacob on the line. He is on line three. Right. Jacob, your thoughts on the topic, please.
I was thinking small penis.
Small penis.
Small penis,
oh.
Yeah. That's
wow, no
probably
one's
a very
the
good
guy
conclusion.
A break.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a giant mystery. We don't know anything else about him except we're looking at this photograph. Michael is on line four. Michael, guy, Twitter avatar, no shirt. What's the deal?
I would say that he probably doesn't get laid much.
Okay, yeah, doesn't get laid.
All right. And finally, Daniel, although, I mean, we're already four in a row. We pretty much have pegged this dude. Let's see what Daniel has to say.
Hey, Daniel.
Hey, guys. Does he have the cell phone in the picture?
Does he have a cell phone?
I don't.
The camera. Sorry.
I don't.
Is he taking a camera picture of himself?
I think he is. Yes, I think he is.
Then definite douchebag.
All right,
definite douchebag. Okay.
All right. So out of the five, we got two douchebags, one asshat, one small penis, and one never gets laid.
This is not good.
How about you, Beer Mug? Any thoughts?
I don't have any thoughts.
What's going on?
Should
dude?
We add that to the list? No thoughts.
What are you thinking?
Why
Beer Mug?
Would you?
How come you?
Mugs?
Yes.
It was Mugs?
Yes.
Did no one listen to the last 3 months of the show in my weight challenge? I just wanted to show it off. I just wanted to show it off
because it was there for a minute.
Yes. I'm not gonna have it again.
Just that fleeting
and
minute.
You look nothing like that now.
Exactly, Lisa.
So for the last 2 weeks, until somebody berated him on Twitter yesterday and said, put on a shirt, dick. For the last 2 weeks, you've gone onto Twitter and there's Beer Mug with his big belly out there looking all macho on his Twitter avatar. And I thought, what kind of guy does that? Now we know, thanks to the Kevin and Bean listeners.
Aww.
A couple of douchebags, you're an asshat, you got a small penis, and you'll never get laid.
Well, what can I do?
Nice work and good ad-libbing.
Summertime is here. That means a brand new K-Rock sticker. You can pick it up at any Southern California Del Taco location. You put it on your car, you fill out the back, send it in, and you could win this year an unbelievable prize. 2012 Honda Civic Hybrid, 2012 Honda Motorcycle, plus tickets to that Honda Civic Tour we've been telling you about with both Linkin Park and Incubus together. All of that for one person just for putting a sticker on the back of their car. It's insane, right?
Yes,
get your ticket, get your sticker at any Del Taco location, and if you want to meet K-Rock today from noon till 2, I think our own Beer Mug is going to be at the Del Taco in Commerce just off the 5 at Washington. He's going to be out there having Del Taco, giving away tickets to the Vans Warped Tour, Chili Peppers, K-Rock music, other cool K-Rock prizes, all the details at K-Rock.com. Definitely get yourself a sticker and enjoy some Del Taco.
I'll be taking pictures without my shirt on.
Yes, he will.
Douchebag.
What about that, Ralph?
Oh, sweet Jesus.
I look good. I got to show it off.
Show it off. First of all, you didn't look that good when you lost 30 pounds, okay? You look like a skinny fat man.
You just didn't look as fat as you used to.
Right, you just weren't fat anymore. But you weren't Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It was close.
No, not even close.
Close.
He did lose 30, but that photo made it look like he had about another 20 to go. All right, 6:35 with the Kevin and Bean Show. I can't believe that I'm forced to introduce this bit, but it's time for Thanks for That Tweet, baby.
Thanks for that
tweet.
Here's the thing. We were talking about Twitter avatars. Now we're talking about actual tweets. Now, nobody can be interesting to everyone. right?
That's true.
So you try. You do your best, and you try to be funny or interesting or whatever.
For some people can't be interesting to anyone.
Right. And then there's that really small group of people who seem to miss 100% of the time.
Yeah. But they sure give it a lot of tries.
They sure try a lot.
Too much. They try too much.
And that's why we present for you.
That's that tweet.
We may go long today, because what a batch. Usually I sift through them and try to pull the best. I got to read every one of these, I think.
Oh, come on.
My followers are very pleased with my Twitter.
Now,
when you see a link to Snooki's naked photos, it really confuses your penis. On the one hand, but then on the other hand...
See, because it's a naked
That's
girl.
That tweet.
Bean.
And you think I want to click on that, but then
That's
you realize
that tweet.
Snooki, so
hey,
you
Bean.
Don't.
Hey, Bean. Yes. The only rule of this game, I forgot to mention, no further clarification needed. If we don't understand it, trust me when I tell you, we'll ask.
We'll ask you.
But
clear things up for us.
We got that. We understood the naked and the Snooki parts.
My wife knows I love another woman, so doesn't mind I am glued to the Jubilee coverage today. She's been my queen my entire life.
That's that tweet.
That makes me want to punch you right in the face.
Doesn't it just...
I'm a fan of Queen Elizabeth. It was very emotional, very exciting watching all that coverage. Yes.
You're not, she's not your queen.
60 years the woman has been on the throne. 60 years. That's a lifetime of service.
You are an American.
Oh, why don't you move?
Underwater.
Tweet.
By the way, go ahead.
Those of us who got our Justin Bieber tickets this morning will be over here. You do what you like over there and just pretend to be happy.
That one felt good. I got to be honest. That was pretty
sweet. Tweet.
Bait. That's all that
That's
is.
That's what I think. That's
pretty
a lie.
Pretty sweet.
It's a lie. It's Bean going, wow, I'm going to make everybody
crazy.
Crazy, thinking, what is he doing?
I confess that I was immature
tweet
to rub in that I got the Bieber tickets when they went on sale because
no,
they sold
no.
out very fast.
No, no, that you bought them. A,
yes, I did. I did.
And B, that you say you're going.
I am.
Lies. Both lies.
You are incorrect.
It's not possible.
I confess I was bragging a little bit, but I was very excited finally getting through.
You know how to
tickets.
Pick the right things to brag about.
I hate confrontations with the neighbors, but have to talk to them about how rude it is when they change their wireless passwords so much.
Oh, man.
See, because he's pirating.
You guys get that, right? Come on.
Wireless.
That's a nice effort.
You just
Come on.
Sit around and just dream that one up.
Yeah. Do you, how much time of the day do you sit around sketching out? No, no, that's not right. And it crosses out a piece of paper. Just
it was a
working
passing
hours on his bad
thought.
Tweets.
A passing thought.
That's that tweet.
Bean! $1 million TV idea. Downton Abbey Road. The Beatles and their butlers live in a house with Yoko as the Dowager Countess.
Come on, Lisa, you're with me.
That
tweet.
And I hate that tweet.
Jeez.
That's that tweet.
How can I take something good and then tie it into something 50 years old and make it not relevant any longer? How can I do that? Oh, that's right. I'll add the Beatles to it.
We're at because it's down
that's
Abbey.
That tweet.
And
we
out called Abbey
we
Road.
Get it.
We are far
it.
From out of time.
We get it. We have plenty of time.
Who else is exhausted just from working the TV remote between the baseball, hockey, and basketball games tonight?
Exhausted? From sitting on your ass?
It's a lot of flipping around with the remote, though. You know what I mean? That's exercise for me.
It's not. Look, we understand it. Don't get us wrong. We understand what you're saying. It's not at all entertaining or funny.
Just a lot of stuff to watch on TV
right,
at one time.
Right, we get that. We understand.
Made you look.
No,
you did not.
That was an entire tweet.
Are you kidding me?
We could have put that in. Is it Snooki or Chloe?
Made you look.
That's
standing by
you
that.
Moron.
You so much.
I'm standing by that one.
Cartoon death.
Die. Death for you.
That's that tweet.
Oh my God, there's a safe coming down on my head.
I
wish. Oh, God.
Are we out for now?
Yeah, I can't.
Thank
I can't
God.
Stomach anymore.
Made you look.
Made you look.
Luke Robitaille joins us after the top of the hour, talking about very busy 48 hours for the Cup. Did you see the Cup down on that bar where in Huntington Beach or Newport, wherever they took it down after the party the other night?
No.
Yeah, it's making the rounds on the Jimmy Kimmel Show last night, and of course you'll have a chance to see it in the parade tomorrow. So we'll talk to Luke about all of that coming up here in just a few minutes. Right now, Ralph joins us. Time for the Showbiz Beat here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hello.
Sir.
What?
Sir.
What?
Hold on. I'm trying to set the settings right. All right. Go ahead.
What?
You're 0 for 2 on Ralph's mic today.
Need a mic. Gotta have one. Part of my job.
Sorry. It's Beer Mug's fault, though, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Very much so.
Now, if I take my shirt off, would that make you feel better? speaking of the Cup, would you like to celebrate the King's win by owning one of the two T-shirts worn at the King's Devils games by Taylor Stevens, porn star Taylor Stevens? The T-shirts, of course, made famous because they appeared behind the head of the Jersey coach while he was on the bench there. She was behind the glass. She literally put him on the glass. Not literally. Wish he had. She'd whipped him out.
She literally didn't have much choice. They were almost on the glass.
They were right there where she was sitting. You could see her boobs floating behind his head, both in games 4 and 6.
By the way, you call those cheap implants boobs?
Yes.
Those aren't boobs. They're lies.
Oh, they're magical fun pillows.
I like that better.
Would you like to own them? You could have. You could be part of history.
The boobs?
No, the T-shirts that she wore that showed the boobs.
Nope.
And you can give money to charity as well. So if you'd like to, you can go to taystevens.com for more details about the auction. But all of the money from the first T-shirt from Game 4 will go to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And all the money raised via auction for the T-shirt she wore during Game 6, which that's the key game. You know,
that's, they want
that,
it, yeah.
That's the real T-shirt you want. That's a game-worn jersey right there from Game 6. So all that sweet money will go to the Obesity Society at obesity.org. So just giving the heads up, if you want a little piece of King's history and a piece of porn star history, it's all there for you. Sad news. Henry Hill is dead. That name may not immediately ring a bell, but that was the guy played by Ray Liotta in Goodfellas. Based on his life. His career with the mob. Liotta played Henry Hill on film. Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, and Paul Sorvino co-starred as the fellow mobsters in that story. But one of the classic mob movies of all time. Henry Hill's passed away at the age of 69. Passed away of a heart attack.
What the hell? I'll
tell you, he was a funny guy, though.
Funny how? How are you funny, Henry?
Just saying. It's funny the way you tell a story. It's funny. If you are, like me, sporting wood for Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Mid-July is when the movie comes out. Warner Brothers has a nice surprise for us Batman fans. They are re-releasing the original two films as well in digital IMAX. So you can see all three films that night, winding up with the midnight premiere of the new blockbuster. So you can see Batman Begins.
That's a lot of Batman.
See Batman also, the second one.
I don't think
that's what it was called, yeah.
Then Dark Knight Rises. So you see all the trilogy, and this, of course, is only for the Thursday leading up to the midnight premiere of Dark Knight Rises. So you can check that out. It's going to be in AMC theaters, 296 AMC locations in the United States. 76 of those will be in IMAX. So do your research and pick out your theater, and then I'll see you there.
Certain
wearing my cape and cowl.
Certain movies need IMAX, and this is one of those that looks like it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great special effects, everything.
We're talking about Linda Lohan and how she keeps stepping on her own tail when it comes to her life and career, but she's got another job. Apparently, she's negotiating now to star in an independent film called The Canyons.
The Kenyans.
The Canyons.
Oh, Canyon.
Canyons, not the Kenyans. Okay. She's not running a marathon.
I didn't know.
She's the Canyons. She will play the girlfriend to a trust fund kid with dreams of making his own movie. Her co-star is a porn actor named James Dean. So she will be co-starring with a porn actor in his first mainstream legitimate film, playing his girlfriend, if all goes to plan. The movie is described as a sexual thriller. Hope she gets her cans out.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's all I'm saying. More movie news. Wes Bentley played the role of Plutarch Heavensby in Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
He will not be reprising that role in the second film, Catching Fire, based on the second book in that Hunger Games movie.
I thought they all had to sign like three movie deals or something.
Apparently they did, but something went horribly wrong and they don't want him anymore.
Oh, no kidding.
Hmm.
So they've recast the role with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Wow.
Those two guys are almost identical. I can see why they would make that choice.
That is weird.
That's a step up.
Yeah. Hoffman will play Plutarch Heavensby in Catching Fire, the movie version of that book. Jennifer Lawrence has already agreed to reprise her role as Katniss, and everyone else is coming back as well. But for some reason, Wes Bentley will not be returning to the franchise. So
it's very odd that they didn't try to replace him with somebody who looks alike, though, like they did in the Harry Potter movie when the Dumbledore guy died.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of easy, too. He had all that makeup and the beard and everything, the hat you could put on to kind of disguise him easily. But I did not see the first film. So is Wes Bentley's character made up in a way that you could make someone else look like him? No?
No.
It looks like him?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like I said, they're both handsome fellas. And finally, we have a release date for No Doubt's new album. Can you believe it?
It's been how many years?
All years.
All years since we've been waiting for this?
11 years. 2001 was when Rocksteady came out.
No kidding.
Wow.
So for over a decade, we've had no new No Doubt music.
We'll see him occasionally. One of them, we'll see it.
We're working on it. Yeah. Oh,
we're in the studio.
We're in the studio. Working on it.
So at first we were like, that's great. Can't wait. And then later we would start going, come on now. Let's get going.
No, working on it.
What are you doing? Stop working.
We got
it out. September 25th.
September 25th is the date.
Great.
Push and Shove is the title for the new CD.
Really? Not Chinese Democracy? They're letting that one go?
You want to hear the first single, Settle Down. On July the 16th is the day that will drop. So I'm sure we'll be playing that here on K-Rock.
Fantastic.
You can hear it. Today's celebrity birthdays, Siegfried of the legendary magician team Siegfried and Roy. He was the one who was not a Tiger Chew toy. He's 73 years old today. Malcolm McDowell, 69 years old. Tim Allen celebrates his 59th birthday. Actress Ally Sheedy is 50. Rivers Cuomo of Weezer is 42. Steve-O.
Yeah, dude.
38 years old. Actor Ethan Embry is 34. Chris Evans, Captain America, 31 years old. The Olsen twins are 26, as is actress Kat Dennings. She's also 26. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Bear with us. I know we've played this clip 1,000 times, but it's time for 1,001. That's got to be your new ringtone, right, Kevin? You should just put that on your phone so you can hear that all year long, right?
Yeah, that's still gives me goosebumps.
Luke Robitaille, how are you, man?
Keep playing it.
I know, you never get tired of that after 45 years. Luke, I thought about you so much, thinking about your long, long career in the NHL and most of those years with the Los Angeles Kings and how hard you've worked over the past 5 or 6 years in the office. And I thought, what must it be like for you? You must have just been bursting with pride sitting there in the stands as you watched that clock count down the other night.
It was unbelievable. It was a surreal moment. You know, you just like you come in and you're a kid and you just want to play. And then, you know, the one team that drafts you, believes in you, becomes your team, you know. And then, I remember seeing the goal in 1986. Man, I want to be part of this group that will win the cup. And, you know, I thought we were going to do it as a player. Never did. And then when I retired, I remember telling Tim Leiweke, I want to be part of the group that wins the cup here. And then to finally see it happen that last night was absolutely incredible. I mean, not last night, 2 nights ago. It feels like it was just a couple minutes
ago. I'm sure. Tell people what it was like all season to be a Kings fan, because they didn't show this kind of promise throughout the entire regular season.
Yeah, it was one of those. I mean, I think the way our summer started last year, or like when we acquired Mike Richards, and there was a lot of excitement, and people expected us to do a lot better. When we started the year, the funny thing is we weren't playing bad. We just weren't scoring goals, you know.
Right.
We were really good defensively. We were one of the top team in our own end. And, you know, we were always dangerous because all the games we were losing were either 2-1 or 1-0 constantly. And but we were missing something. And then somehow it just seems to click. It still took a while. We changed codes and we were playing a little bit better but not good enough. And then suddenly, just around the trade deadline when there was a lot of rumors about different players, it just seemed like the entire team kind of got together and just started playing like like the way it should play, you know, the what were the expectations?
Right, because I heard a lot of the experts on TV or a lot of the people that like to talk about, you know, what knowing hockey in general, they would say this is such a surprise from the LA Kings. And I would say, no, the surprise was how poorly we played offense during the season. I'm glad that we peaked right at this moment, but it's not surprising to people who knew the players that we had and the team that we'd put together.
Exactly, because you look at our roster, you're like, okay, that's a really good roster. It's just that for some reason it just wasn't clicking offensively. What I liked about it is what we all liked about it was the fact that we're always playing really well as a team. We're really good defensively and so forth, but we just couldn't put it together, it seemed like, in the offensive zone. And then suddenly it just happened, like, at the right time.
Even on the power play, the five-minute power play in the first period of Game 6, I was standing on top of my seat, and the guys kept telling us, don't stand on the seats. And we're like, sorry, Stanley Cup, got to stand on the seats. And they got the five-minute major, and I thought to myself, I didn't say it out loud, but I thought to myself, we've had such problems with the power play scoring. If we don't score at least a goal in this five-minute major, we're in a lot of trouble. And all of a sudden, we scored three, and I pretty much had an orgasm right there. I'm sorry.
That's unfortunate for the guy sitting in front of you. I'll tell you that.
Sorry to tell everybody that, but it was first the first goal, and then the second one, and then right away the third one. I was like, this is too good to be true. I can't believe it.
Yeah. So, when we got to the third, like, we were like, oh, my gosh, this is it. This is the
right
moment.
Right.
Luke, let me ask you this. The first three rounds of the playoffs, I mean, no one could touch the Kings. I mean, it was ridiculous how easily you cut your way through the first three series. But in the Stanley Cup, was there a moment when New Jersey won those two games in a row, even though you were still up 3-2, was there a moment that you allowed yourself to think, no, this isn't, no, come on, right? I mean, did it cross your mind, or were you just always positive that you knew you guys were going to pull it out?
There was one thing I knew for sure. The way we were playing, because keep in mind, like, the two games we lost, we played really well, especially the last one. We were the better team. And there's one thing I knew in my mind. I mean, I didn't want to go back to Jersey.
Right.
But I remember thinking, there's no way we're going to lose 4-0. There's no way this team can lose 4-0. Not the way they were playing. But knowing, too, that our like conference, we're more used to traveling than the Eastern Conference.
Oh, is that right?
I remember telling my wife Saturday, say, if we play really hard Saturday at the game, not knowing who would win, I said, I was pretty sure coming back at home, it would be an entire game. I mean, I didn't know we'd get a five-minute power play, but I just knew as a team we would be a much better team, because traveling becomes a big issue for the teams. I mean, New Jersey hadn't left their time zone since January.
Wow.
This is the first time.
So
we knew that was an advantage for us. So coming in, we were ready for that game, and our guys played unbelievable.
How is Rob Scuderi? Did he get hurt on that play?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was afraid of.
I think he broke his nose and split his lip in half. I mean, he was in bad shape, broke a bunch of teeth, too.
But came right back out. By the way, you must have an amazing dentist on staff now.
Yeah.
Now that they've won the cup, right? Because most of your players lost most of their teeth.
He's busy in the summer, that's for sure.
Hey, Luke, this is the voice of Luke Robitaille in the business office of the LA Kings. Excuse me, we now are required to call them the Stanley Cup winning Los
that's
Angeles
right.
Kings.
Here that's right, don't forget it.
Luke, this may be an impossible question for you to answer, honestly, but Kevin and I were talking about this off the air yesterday.
He has to lie, Bean.
You won a
he has
cup
to lie.
As a player with the Red Wings. How does that compare, if you can say, to winning a cup in the management side for the Los Angeles Kings? We were trying to guess on this. I've got to think the Kings one means more to you just because that's your team.
Who said he has to lie?
Me. I said that, Kevin.
Because
if your answer is Detroit, you can't say that.
No.
The enemy. They're the devil, Luke.
Here's the difference. First of all, like, I've always said the Kings was my team.
All right.
Okay? And I've always felt that, and it'll always be, this is where I live. So from that standpoint, it's I can't even describe it. The second thing is, when you're a player, you more realize you're in the room, and it's, you know, you're with the players and the coaches, and you really think it's just for you. You know, you understand about the fans and your family, but you don't really live it because you don't have time. It's like you're going to war for 2.5 months. By the time you win, you're just in the room and you're going crazy, and you throw a few parties, then you go home. when you work behind the scene and you start meeting all the fans, all the people, their passion. I mean, look at you, Kevin. You're nuts.
Yeah, I am nuts.
You know, in a good way. I mean, just in a good way, you know. But our fans have so much passion for our team. So suddenly, everything becomes a lot bigger. So to me, to feel this reactions from the fans, from all the people that work in the office and in the background, I mean, you see our trainer, you see everyone, how much work and passion there is behind it. It becomes almost sweeter because you realize how much bigger it is, and it's truly incredible. I mean, there was a lot of grown men crying in the stands last game.
Yeah, that was
me.
That's
pretty amazing.
That was Kevin, you know? Too. First he orgasmed, then he cried. That was his evening.
So, yeah, I know. Maybe the first comment.
That's normally how I do it.
It truly is the best. For me to have my name and knowing that the Los Angeles Kings are on the Stanley Cup,
yep.
It's truly incredible.
All right, you don't have to lie. Fantastic.
The parade and the rally that's going on, everything, all that stuff tomorrow, that's going to be unbelievable. It's going to be like living that game all over again because the people are – that's another chance for the people to get up close to the players, get up close to the cup, and show you how much love there is. That's going to be very emotional for all you guys too, I imagine, Luke.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. Look, we want to become like one of the franchises, a premier franchise in the NHL. We want to compete for the cup the whole, you know, for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And our fans have been incredible. So I know tomorrow we're going to have a lot of people at that parade. I know it's going to be incredible. I urge people to go and show their support to guys because they've been through a lot. And this is something they'll remember for the rest of their lives. And for any fans, this is worth it tomorrow to be there. Be there at noon and be loud. It's going to be incredible.
Noon near 5th and Figueroa, and then it's going to be right. About a 45-minute travel to Staples Center. And then at 2:30, you're going to have a video highlights and a presentation. And I'm sure you're going to get up and speak and thank everybody, and it should be exciting.
Oh, it's going to be an incredible day for our franchise and our players. It's truly it's going to be a moment.
Well, I know you've heard the congratulations word about a billion times in the last 2 years, Luke, but we're so happy for you and so proud for you and your guys. And, you know, I just can't wait for next season now. Thank you so much for coming on all season long. We appreciate
it. Thanks, you guys. You guys' support with us has been, when we sucked, you guys were there for us. Thanks a lot.
That's what makes the cup so special, is we sucked for so long.
Exactly.
Thank you, Luke.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot for listening today. Wedding disasters coming up next hour. Plus, we're going to tell you how you can win yourself an underground bunker. If you're one of those doomsday preppers type, there's a new TV show called Last Family on Earth. We want to get you involved, and that's all coming up here on The Kevin Amin Show. First, though, how about skateboarding legend Christian Hosoi joining us in studio here on The Kevin Amin Show. Christian has a book just released this week called Hosoi, My Life as a Skateboarder, Junkie, Inmate, Pastor. That's a lot of words. That's a lot of names.
That's three people's lives.
It is. That's what that is. You crammed a lot into a short period of time. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Stoked to be here.
Great to have you. I know a lot of our, especially people who have been listening to K-Rock for a long, long time, remember back in the day when you were one of the top skaters in the world, back in the Jay Adams days and Tony Alva and Tony Hawk, of course, and all those guys. I mean, how young were you? Like 11, 12 years old when you started skateboarding?
Yeah, I started about 8 years old, started meeting all those guys about 10 years old at the Marina Del Rey skate park down near Venice Beach. And those guys really took me under their wings right away because my dad became the manager at Marina Del Rey Skate Park. And so it became my backyard, and those guys became my big brothers, and those guys really taught me the ropes.
And you went up against Tony Hawk all the time.
Yeah, we grew up together. We were entering amateur contest in 79-80, and we turned pro in 82. So we've had, this is 30 years this year of our careers being pro. So
that's amazing.
Help me understand this, Christian, before we get into the, you know, the downfall and the comeback of you. How did skateboarding go so viral around the country and then around the world back in the days pre-internet? I mean, were you guys shooting little 8mm tapes? And if so, how did people see them and know what you were doing out in Southern California?
I think the lifestyle of a skateboarder was so radical. It was so unique and different. It was culturally, you know, trying to change. They were being, you know, really trying to lead in fashion, whether it be, you know, even just being here in California. California really dictates to the world, you know, really Los Angeles, California kind of dictates to the world what's cool, what's hip, what's hot. And we thought we were it. at that time.
You were at that time. That's accurate.
And it is being such a small industry at that time, everyone focused on us. And so the one magazine or two magazines that there was, Thrasher and Transworld, even prior to that, Skateboarder Magazine was kind of cool. But then it all went under, and then we took it, and it was like Backyard, Raging, you know, Rebels, Outlaws, and they called us criminals, so we came up with stickers, Skateboarding's not a crime, right, you know, all these things to try and, you know, tell people you can't tell us who we are, regardless of, you know, if we were that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. We can say it, you can. Pre X Games and multi-million-dollar contracts and all the video, you know, tie-ins and everything like that, was there money to be made in your sport back then? You have a lot of sponsors or what?
Yeah, I mean, I was
there
young.
It wasn't the kind of prize money that prize money took a while to get going for competition, right?
Yeah, but I was kind of a young businessman. I started my own company at 17. I was like, wait, if these guys can sell my board and sell that many boards, if I should just go make them myself, I could make all the profit. And I was like, and that's what I did in 1984. Wow. Started Hosoi Skateboards and pretty much was making, you know, $10,000-$20,000 a month really quickly.
That's
and
crazy.
Big
money.
Sponsors came in. I mean, it was amazing to like really stand my ground back then when there was no sponsorships. And I was like, no, you should pay me this because this is cool. This is what people are going to want to see. They're going to want to buy your stuff, and I believe in it, so I think everybody else is. And they were like, should we take the chance and pay this kid all this money? And they're like, well, we ain't got nothing to lose. And they did it, and sure enough, it exploded. The mid-'80s was just a huge explosion. I was making a couple $100,000 a year when it was really a small industry at the time, and so... Yeah, I had a great time, like, telling people, you know, how much they were going to pay me. And when they did, I thought I was, like, I was a businessman. Yeah. I was, like, an entrepreneur.
Hey, there are a lot of people who are athletes or artists that then try to go into business and fail miserably because it's a different skill set being a businessman.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be thick-skinned, tender-hearted in a certain way. If you get, you know, in a ruffle, you know, your feathers you know, bound up, it'll eat you up and spit you out. You got to really have respect for everybody. And I think that's kind of like the attitude that I had. I really was happy and I was passionate about skateboarding. And right. So I just wanted to respect it at the time. Respect my fans, you know, respect the sport. But I was also having a great time competing. That was kind of like what drove me, is the competition.
Tony Hawk wrote in the foreword about how you could, like, he could do the tricks technically, but you made him look good. And that used to drive him crazy.
Yeah, I mean, super compliment. I mean, that's a huge compliment coming from him because he, to a certain extent, it kind of got that, you know, kind of critique back in the day between the two different camps, the style, the technical camps. But, you know, he was brilliant on a skateboard as well. I think he's a humble guy, you know, even today. You know, I hung out with him yesterday, and he's just real humble in that area. But, you know, to hear him say stuff like that, it really does, you know, make me think, wow, you know, maybe I did have a big impact on skateboarding in a certain aspect, and I'm proud of that today, you know? And I'm alive to say that, you know?
Yeah, which you're also proud of, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, it's a miracle I'm here with the things that I've been through, but I think that, you know, just stuff like that, him doing the foreword of my book is just, you know, I'm very thankful.
It's a beautiful book. It's available everywhere, called Hosoi, My Life as a Skateboarder Junkie, Inmate Pastor. Now, we've covered a little bit. We touched on some of the greatness, the high times of you being one of the best skateboarders in the world. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we want to get into the junkie part, in the inmate part, and find out how you are still alive and here talking to us today.
Yes.
More with our guest, Christian Hosoi, right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Having fun this morning talking to Christian Hosoi in studio here on the world-famous K-Rock. The book is called My Life as a Skateboarder Junkie Inmate Pastor. Just released this week. You can follow Christian on Twitter at Christian Hosoi. You were telling us some great stories on and off the air about the early days of skateboarding, and things were going so great for you. You were making all this money, you were famous, you were popular, you were healthy, you were happy. How did it all go wrong, Christian? What happened?
Man, I tell you, it's like everyone faces it. Peer pressure comes in. You want to be the number one guy. And just because I was on that pedestal doesn't mean I don't face that same peer pressure to continue trying to jump through the hoops of what everybody else is telling you, you know, you are or who you're supposed to be. And so it was all about being the rock star. So what comes with rock star status? It comes with the parties, the drugs, the girls, and just everything, traveling the world. And I thought this was going to last forever. And when it starts depleting, you start feeling empty. Next thing you know, you're trying to cover up some of the maybe, you know, pain or some of the insecurities you may have with drugs, and then it becomes more drugs. Next thing you know, you're doing things you really, you know, wouldn't have done if you stayed on track on what you were started out doing. Like, I wanted to be the best in the world. I wanted to be a businessman, but those things kind of took the back seat. And you always think you can handle a little bit. Everyone thinks, oh, I'll do it in moderation, but this stuff will grab a hold of you.
What's
and next
the drug
thing
of choice?
Know,
was it meth?
It was crystal methamphetamine.
I know. Remember the first in moderation? Do they?
Do you remember the first time you had it?
Yeah, it was probably the early '90s. I mean, I did it when I was a young kid. You know, I did a ton of drugs. I mean, I was doing marijuana at 10, acid at 12, cocaine at 14, and you know, I was doing the Black Beauties and stuff like that back when I was a kid. But it wasn't a problem until I got into my early 20s, and that was in the early 90s, and that's when I started doing it on an everyday basis. And I did it every day for almost 7 years.
Wow. Wow. So you lost the ability to compete, right?
Did you stop skating during that time?
I actually skated, like, underground, you know, events, backyard pool parties and stuff like that. Skateboarding was still kind of like on a surgence because of the X Games in 95. So there was kind of an upswing. But I was, like, so anti because, you know, I was trying to search for identity. You know what I mean? Who am I? And I couldn't find it in the culture of skateboarding at the time. And I thought, well, I did that. I was number one. Maybe I need to find some other art form, maybe some other pathway. So I went this dark road, and it really did just kind of throw me off course of skateboarding. But here I am today, and everything happens for a reason. And, you know, even going to prison, you know, I mean, God.
How did that happen?
I mean, we make choices in life.
Mm-hmm.
And we are bound to that decision, and there's repercussions. And for me, you know, those choices got me there, but God didn't design that to happen. A lot of people say, oh, yeah, he brought me here, but you know, he didn't. It was my choices that got me there. And it was what I was going to do where I was at was going to change the course of my life. And I've from then on, you know, it was in January 2000, I got arrested.
And you got arrested in, was it in Hawaii
Honolulu,
at the airport?
Honolulu. At the airport. Waikiki.
After you arrived.
Yeah, right when I got off the plane, they were waiting for me.
Really?
Yeah.
And what'd you have on you, Christian?
I had like a pound and a half of crystal meth.
In a,
just enough,
like
that's
in
enough
a
for a
hip
weekend.
Sack, you know, kind of like a hip sack,
a fanny,
fanny
bag.
Right?
Yeah.
They should have arrested you just for having a fanny pack.
Yeah, yeah. I get that.
I thought you were stylish.
I get that all the time. Now, I thought that was the style at that moment.
Yeah.
Wait, it was concealed. Does that count?
A little, yes.
Were you, because of that large amount, was the charge intent to distribute? Is that what they got you for?
Yeah, possession with intent to distribute. And then
how long they sent you to jail for?
They were saying I was going to do 10 years. I thought they were being like the movies, interrogating me with the light and saying, and I was like, yeah, right, whatever. You know, easy, Dano, right?
Yeah. So you weren't taking it seriously at all when you got caught?
No, I thought, you know, okay, I'm busted. I'm going to have to do some time. But I didn't think I was going to look at 10 years.
Right.
And so once I got in there and I was looking at 10 years, that's when everything, all the questions and why am I here? What did I do? Where am I at? And then that's when, you know, my name Christian, my nickname Christ, I invented the Christ there, and God kind of like confronted me and my girlfriend saying, Christian, we just got to trust in God. I'm like, God, I need a lawyer. I need an attorney. I need bail. What are you talking about? And she's like, no, he's going to help us and go get a Bible. And that's when I went and went, what in the world is happening to
me? And
my
you
life?
Weren't a religious person at all before?
Never went to church, never read a Bible, never prayed. You know, my parents were good parents, you know, with high standards of being honest, having, you know, good integrity, being loyal, those things. So I kind of had those characteristics, but I never, ever opened a Bible once until I got into that prison.
It sounded to me from reading your book like it didn't take a long time. It was day one or two. I mean, I would think you would be in jail for 2 years before you hit rock bottom. It was right away.
Everyone has like their rock bottom experience. And for me, you know, being coming from an artistic home, my dad was very intellectual, very smart. My mother as well. And I had a lot of common sense. And I think that, you know, I was trying to run from responsibility. And here I am having to face it. And I finally just went, you know what, threw up my hands, surrendered to it and said, you know what, if you're real, you need to speak to me now. And that's when I opened it up. And it's like, all I saw was God's goodness, His mercy, His forgiveness, His grace. I mean, these words are words that I kind of knew. We kind of like, you know, are stoked on them from a distance, but we don't really go down and look at the definition of them.
Right.
You know, and where they came from. Life? Where did they even come from? And for me, I just studied, and then I was like, this is incredible. Why hasn't anyone told me about this? And that's when I just, you know, I mean, it must have been 2 weeks that I finally just opened up, and I said, all right, I'm going to surrender to this, gave my life to Jesus.
All right, now, at that point, you're in jail, and how do you not get into more trouble? It seems like once you're in jail, it just seems to keep building and building.
You know, I grew up in the streets of L.A., and I think that with that, you know, kind of like, you know, I guess upbringing, I kind of meshed in really well. And in there, I was, I mean, I walked through the doors and they're like, Christian Asoy, what's up?
Wow, you're
and I'm
a hero.
Like, we saw you on the news. We knew you were going to be here. I'm like, oh my gosh, what are you here for? He's like, I'm here for murder. And I'm like, what am I doing here?
Oh my
literally.
God.
And they're like, and I'm like, so what am I going to do? They're like, 10 years. Oh, walk in the park. That's gravy, brah.
That's
no
nothing.
Worries.
Oh my God.
I'm doing 140 years. And I was like, man, that is a walk in the park compared to that.
I don't want to be friends with you.
Christian, I've always been fascinated with this. I understand why people behind bars find God. I understand that you need something to think about while you're in jail other than revenge and regret. What kept you going on the path after you got out of jail when you were a free man and could go back to your old ways? How have you stayed so strong?
You know, there's a lot of people that say they're Christians or that they, you know, even leave the jail cell with their Bibles or walk with God afterwards. I think it's people need a real encounter with the living Savior, not with a ritualistic lifestyle or a legalistic, dutiful life where you just go to church and you tell the pastor or anybody to just hand feed you and then you go along your way and you live your own life. I think that when I had a lot of time, and believe me, I had a lot of time, 5 years to really read and study, and I think that I built a personal relationship with the Lord that when I walked out, I knew that I was going to be on the Kevin and Bean show one day, you know, sharing my testimony, that God would open up that door for me to be real about my faith, not to try and pretend that I'm somebody else. And I think that that's what this world's looking for, people that are just real. I mean, I remember being a skateboarder, and if you're a poser, we'd point you out a mile away,
yeah.
You know? And same thing with our faith. We need to just be real. We need to be, you know, not judgmental, not critical towards people. We need to be loving, you know what I mean?
You've never had any trouble with a potential relapse in terms of drugs, though?
Not once.
Not one time.
I haven't had a craving. Matter of fact, I've had so much passion to want to be an example, you know, a role model for people that have no hope. They think that that's the life. Because that's what I felt like. I thought that's the way I'm going to live. If I want to fit into society
right. And
into the Hollywood, you know, L.A. scene, I'm going to have to do everything that everyone else is doing. But now I'm kind of like a rebel again, going against the tide, telling people I'm not going to be controlled by you and I'm not going to have to follow your ways. And I can still hang out with you and I can still love on you and I can still skate and, you know, go anywhere I want to go. It's not about where you are at. It's just about who you
are.
Did
you have to get new friends when you got out? Not all new friends, but did you have to get some new friends?
Well, you have an inner circle of friends that you keep tight that you want or going in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have your, you know, other friends that, you know, I have lifelong friends that they're still living a crazy life.
Right.
You know, I mean, I grew up in Hollywood, so I mean, I know all the actors, the musicians, and I'm still friends with them all. And it's great to have that because you can be an influence, you know what I mean? And you don't have to preach to them, you know, the word of God, say John 3:16, for God so, you know, it's not about that. It's about me just being their friend, you know, loving on people. And just, I think that is what draws people to want to know, what is it that makes you tick?
Have you ever heard the words, Hosoi's here, put it away?
Oh, well, it's cool, you know, when you have respect, you know, somebody will cuss in front of me, oh, sorry, you know, and then, you know, they'll want to smoke weed or they'll want to, like, you know, do whatever, and they'll be like, no, you know, Hosoi's here, Pastor Hosoi's here, you can't do that. And, you know, there's an actual, you know, reverence or respect level that's appreciated, but, you know, they're not really doing it kind of like for me. I think it's the presence that, I guess it's what I bring. It's the purity of heart that they respect. And
well,
so
that's cool.
That's what we can, you know, that's where we shine our light, you know, and we don't have to say anything.
I'm sad that we're out of time, Christian, because that's a beautiful story. You are now the associate pastor at a church in
the Sanctuary Church.
Huntington, right?
It's in Westminster, but we were born in Huntington Beach.
And you're happily married. You got four kids. You're still skating, and you're feeling great and loving life.
Yeah, I'm excited. I got four beautiful children. Story. My wife, we're going to be 11 years.
Wow.
You know, married, and it's just I can't tell you how blessed I am today. Yeah.
It's a beautiful book. Hundreds of great photographs, lots of legends in there. You're going to really enjoy the story. Talk about ups and downs of a man's life. It's called Hosoi, My Life as a Skateboarder, Junkie, Inmate, Pastor. And you said that's available hard copy and also on the ebook, right? You can get both.
Yeah, you can get them both. I think it's Amazon, you know, all the Barnes
probably
and Nobles.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, all the outlets.
And follow Mr. Hosoi on Twitter at Christian Hosoi. Thanks so much for coming in, man. We really enjoyed it.
Man, I appreciate it, guys.
Coming up right after the top of the hour, we'll tell you about a recent wedding where the bride got punched in the face and lobster was thrown at the reception.
Lobster, that sounds great.
Love it.
That's a nice reception. They got lobster.
We're going to be wanting to hear your stories of wedding disasters coming up on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, Ralph is here with the Showbiz Beat. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. I want to straighten something out. I last hour, I talked about the casting of Philip Seymour Hoffman in the second Hunger Games movie, Catching Fire.
Yes.
Replacing Wes Bentley in the movie. This was a poorly written story that I was reading from, hence my confusion. But Wes Bentley played the game maker in Hunger Games. His character apparently no longer appears in the story after the first story.
Oh, I see.
So Philip Seymour Hoffman will be coming in as a new character who plays the same role as the guy who runs the Hunger Games, apparently. So they're different characters. They're not...
He's not replacing him,
but he is playing the same role in terms of the mythology of the person who runs the Hunger Games.
Got it.
So I wanted to clear that up, because if I get one more email from you F and Hunger Games fans, I'm going to burn your houses down.
I guess I'm not a good enough fan, because I did not catch that.
You did not realize that, thinking... I count on you. What good is having you here if I can't count on you to catch Broadway mistakes and Hunger Games mistakes? For God's sake.
I was confused.
Yeah, so sorry. Apparently the character Wes Bentley plays is no longer in the storyline when the second film starts, and so a new guy has taken over the Hunger Games, and that would be Philip Seymour Hoffman. So that's all cleared up, and I'm serious, Hunger Game fans. I don't give an F. I really don't about any of this. I was just reading a story. Just came out wrong. Get effing over yourselves. Seriously. You all have problems.
So you want more emails?
I can't comprehend that. Somebody hears, you know, if I was driving to my car and I heard that in the radio, I'd be like,
what an idiot.
That's just a wrong story. What am I going to do with the rest of my day? I got work to look forward to. I have a relationship I'm happy about. I would just move on with my life. Wouldn't stop and write a 3-page email to some Yahoo on the radio straightening out the mythology of the Hunger Games.
It's important.
Kill yourself. Kill yourself.
Hey,
that's my advice.
You're a sci-fi guy. It's important to get stuff
exactly
right.
And
world.
I hear stuff that's wrong all the time. You know what I never do? Stop my day and punch out a 3-page email. Doesn't happen. Let me correct you about the mythology of the Hunger Games.
I support them. I support anyone who takes the time to write a strongly worded letter.
Of course you do. You also tweet, made you look. So F you.
That's true. He's got a point.
All right. Justin Bieber
is the best.
Shut up.
Oh, was that not where that story was going? I'm sorry. I got ahead of you.
No, it's not. Was slammed the other day by former President George Herbert Walker Bush. Bush won.
George Bush's dad?
Yeah, who was also president. Let's not forget.
Right.
He was being interviewed by his granddaughter on the Today Show.
He's still alive?
He is still alive.
He was 88 this week.
And so his granddaughter, Jenna, is a correspondent on the Today Show, apparently. And she sat down with Grandpa and talked to him about many things, including his time as commander-in-chief, but also about his wacky socks.
wacky socks.
Oh, yeah.
He's
yeah.
a wacky sock
oh,
guy.
Oh, Bush One is known for his wacky socks.
Is he known
oh.
That?
Oh, yeah. He loves the colorful socks.
I've never heard of that.
Oh, Kevin, we all know that legend about President Bush, the one, the first.
Never heard about
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. Nope. Well, here's Jenna talking to her grandpa about that.
So your socks have been making headlines.
Well, I like a colorful sock. I'm a sock man. This is a modest pair here today. Subdued, you might say.
And they've been comparing your socks to that of Justin Bieber.
Bieber? Is he a sock man?
He evidently is a sock man just like you.
I don't know much about the Bieber. Never see him. I don't know what he does.
Have you ever heard his song?
No. How's it go?
Baby, 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 oh.
Is that his song?
You know it.
I don't think I'd like it.
I don't think I like it either.
There you go.
And his granddaughter.
Mr. President,
it.
I don't think I like it.
I don't think I like
that.
No.
So being that you used to be the president, can't you get the Secret Service to snuff out Bieber? Can't
right.
you send them out? Can't you get SEAL Team 6 to go do a double tap?
I think once you admit you're a sock man, you lose your influence.
you lose your power to command the SEAL, the Navy SEALs.
Worst superhero Marvel Comics ever came up with, by the way, was sock man.
By the way, America could start picking off all of Canada's celebrities. And what would they do to us? There's nothing they could do. They just have to take it, right?
No, I like Canada. Canada, but
I
for the most
too.
Part, does nothing but make our lives better with the people they contribute to our entertainment
Agreed,
industry.
Except for
Bieber. Bieber is the mistake
Celine
that must
Dion.
Be corrected.
Celine can go, too,
no,
though,
I
right?
agree. But she's sort of out of our
yeah,
faces.
Yeah, she's not
so.
Really. You have to go to Vegas to be confronted by her. Bieber's in our everyday life.
It must stop.
He must stop. He must have find the spider hole that he's in and snuff him out.
I don't think I'd like that.
I don't think
I'd like that. Is he a sock man?
A sock
on
man.
Debt. Wouldn't be prudent.
Celebrity birthdays today. Siegfried of Siegfried and Roy is 73 years old. Malcolm McDowell is 69. Tim Allen. 59 years old today, Ali Sheedy.
How's Omar celebrating the Tim Allen birthday, by the way? We heard anything from him down at the
you know,
think
he's
studio?
Off the Tim he tip turned. Since Tim was a dick to him in person.
Yeah.
He worshipped Allen from afar and then met him in real life, and Tim Allen was a dick to him, and now he's not so enthralled anymore.
So he lost his only fan, Omar.
Yes.
Probably sitting in his,
Shut up, Tim Allen.
He's probably just sitting in his office with his arms crossed. I'm not going to celebrate
I refuse. Ali Sheedy's 50. Rivers Cuomo of Weezer is 42. Steve-O from Jackass.
Yeah, dude.
Celebrates his 38th birthday. Chris Evans, Captain America, is 31 years old. The Olsen twins are 26, as is Kat Dennings. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Hey, quick reminder, you can meet our own beer mug at the Del Taco in Commerce today off the 5 Freeway at Washington Boulevard from noon until 2. Mugs is going to be out there with tickets to the upcoming Vans Warped Tour, also Red Hot Chili Peppers tickets, fun, all sorts of K-Rock music to give away, and other prizes. Details at K-Rock.com. The reason you're going to be there is to pick up your brand new K-Rock sticker. It's available at that and all Southern California Del Taco locations. Fill it out, send it in, and you could win a car, a motorcycle, and tickets to the Honda Civic Tour with Linkin Park and Incubus. Pretty sweet deal that we do
That's
every
not
summer.
Bad. That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Let's talk about wedding disasters because this is just, it seems like you have everything you need, which is a lot of relatives and a lot of friends. A lot of weddings have free-flowing booze, and that mm-hmm. can be a problem.
That can be a huge issue, yeah.
Yeah. So
look, if it weren't for open bars, most people wouldn't even go to weddings.
Agreed. That's Let's how face you get it. In there.
That's the draw, because sitting around in your monkey suit all day to watch people you barely care about getting married is not much of an incentive.
This story comes to us from the Daily Telegraph. It's from England, and it's a former soccer player there who's a star. And they had the wedding, and then there was a food fight, and they started throwing lobster at each other. Now, when you're planning your special day, I don't imagine you include the food fight, because everybody's dressed up.
And this was just for fun?
Oh, yeah.
They were just having a great time?
Who knows at what point it stopped being a great time? I imagine for the bride and the groom, the first lobster that was thrown was...
That was that.
Was bad.
Yeah.
By the way, lobster's awfully expensive to be thrown at a wedding. Throw the pasta or something cheap, right?
So they're throwing lobster at each other, and then at some point, things do get out of hand, and the bride gets punched in the face.
Ha-ha!
Oh, man.
This is her day. She gets punched in the face. They have to call the police.
Ugh.
So the police come out. They arrest people. They leave. They go back to their party. Mm-hmm. And later, they were called back a couple of hours later because the group tore down a door and started smashing stuff. I mean,
Who
it just,
are these people?
I don't know. As a former soccer player, so maybe it's
his
hooligans.
Hooligans.
I don't know, but how crazy must that have been for the police to have to come out twice to your wedding reception?
I wonder if they look back and go, yes!
I don't know.
Was memorable.
I would think they would, except for the bride getting punched in the face. Although, you know, later when it doesn't hurt anymore, that's pretty funny.
It's a great story.
Yeah, remember my wedding when I got punched in the face? Oh, that was so funny. So anyway, we're going to take your calls, 1-800-520-1067. That is the number if you've had a wedding gone bad. Usually it's the reception, let's be honest. Yeah. It's not usually the ceremony.
Right. This was a story, by the way, that appeared on the Huffington Post, and they asked their readers to weigh in with some of their wedding disaster stories, and there are some great ones in the comment section. At my brother's wedding to his wife, she walked through a huge anthill. He had to pick out all of the ants that had crawled up her dress.
Oh, my God.
Another reader writes in, at my daughter's wedding, my husband's grandfather stripped down to his underwear and pulled it away and did thrusting motions on the dance floor.
What?
Here's one. My mom showed up to our rehearsal dinner high on OxyContin and proceeded to throw a tantrum. Good times.
Sweet.
It just goes on and on. I mean, I guess there are just so many variables involved in weddings, as you mentioned, there are lots of people plus alcohol in an event that not everybody wants to be at. And it just seems like you're inviting trouble. Here's one more, and then we'll go to your calls at 1-800-520-1067. At my wedding, Kate writes in, the venue broke their sound system, had no music going down the aisle, and all the menus read, congratulations, Kate and Chris, Chris being my dad's name, not my husband's.
See, this is what happens when you want to have fun. You want to plan something huge. The bigger the plans, the more that can go wrong.
True.
And that's why we always come back with Halloween disasters and Thanksgiving disasters and Christmas disaster, New Year's Eve disasters, because usually it's family and friends that kind of get into trouble with the alcohol.
Yeah.
But we're going to take your calls now. Let's start with Kiel, I think it is, or Kiel. How do you say your name?
Yeah, this is Kiel.
Kiel.
Kiel. All right, Kiel, I'm excited about your story because it looks like it involves a lawsuit, and that's not what you ever want out of the wedding. What happened, dude?
We got married about a few years ago, and our grandmother, or my wife's grandmother, fell at our wedding and broke her hip.
Oh, no.
And then 4 months later, she ended up dying because of her breaking her hip.
Oh, no!
And so her family later on tends to sue us for damages due to killing her grandmother, thus being in a lawsuit for the next almost 2 years.
Over
$1 million.
Wow.
Now, help me out. I'm sorry if I missed this. She fell during the wedding or during the reception or where?
During the reception, yes.
How is that your fault? Is there any negligence at all on your part? Did she slip on something or what happened?
She was already in her 90s and she fell. Just, you know, someone bumped into her. She fell, landing on a hip. You know, things are brittle at that point. So.
Wow.
And then the family that wasn't even at the wedding heard of it and decides to sue us because we were neglecting and not taking care of her, obviously.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I mean, essentially, these people are suing their own family, right? I mean, you guys are in a larger family group, and they're suing you.
Yep.
How did it end up?
Well, they failed drastically at trying to sue us, so that didn't fall through. But we're still happily married, but, you know, we still have that in the background of always being on our wedding day.
Yeah.
Well, there are certain things that you look back and laugh, like the bride getting punched in the face. I'm not sure grandma dying is what you want to look back on.
Not at all.
And time doesn't really make that better.
Did you put a picture of her body in the wedding album? Is that her slumped out on the dance floor? Is that part of the slideshow?
No, none of that. She's in our wedding book, but still live and happy.
Still alive at that point.
Wow. Kiel, I never anticipated anything as bad as this. I'm so sorry for you and your wife's loss, but thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it, okay?
No problem. Thank you.
We didn't know someone was going to die.
Right off the bat.
All right. 1-800-520-1067. Your wedding day disasters. We'll take your calls next on the Kevin and Bean. Talking about wedding and reception disasters here on the Kevin and Bean Show at 1-800-520-1067. Let's go to George down there on line 8. First, though, from the Kevin and Bean Facebook page, Jackie writes in, before walking down the aisle at my beach wedding, a pelican crapped all over my husband and me.
Oh, no.
We had to Photoshop poo stains out of all of our photos.
That's the best. Why would you Photoshop that out?
They got married in pelican poop. I love that so much. George, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling the Kevin and Bean Show. What's your wedding day disaster?
Well, a couple of years ago, I went on a cruise in the Newport Harbor. My cousin was getting married, and we were on one of those double-decker kind of boats, and they lost control of steering and being able to stop, and we crashed into all the boats that are on the in the harbor there, about four of them.
Sweet!
A nice sailboat, and then it careened us back in the middle of the harbor, and we kind of cruised to a stop and had to honk the horn to have one guy move his boat. I guess he was living on the boat. He had to move his boat, but we ended up stopping.
Good times.
That never happens, right?
Yeah.
No, you never hear of a boat not being able to be controlled and smashing into other boats.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
They tried to fix. They were actually trying to fix it, and they were totally panicking. I was standing up on the very top where the owner of the boat was, and everybody was just freaking out. And it actually busted out a bunch of the side of the windows on the very bottom, and a bunch of people got some glass on them, but nobody really got hurt.
Oh, my God. That's not the memory you want from your wedding reception out on the water, though. That's for sure.
I think
thank you for the call, George. Let's try Annette. She's on line one. She has a story that I'm guessing began with alcohol. Hi, Annette. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Kevin and Bean.
Certainly.
Lisa May.
Hello.
My friends will talk about this story. We had a photographer who asked if he could bring his wife because they had gotten married in Laguna and there was some romantic tie to Laguna. And that's where our wedding was. So I said he could bring her, and she ended up getting completely wasted. She sat at the bar and harassed all my guests about tipping the bartender. She ended up drinking all the drinks.
Oh no!
And
your photographer's wife. At any point did he go over and say, "Hey, how about not doing this?"
No, he didn't even deal with her. There was no romance there at all. He just ignored her the entire time. And so she decided to sit with my guests when it was dinner time at the table. And one of my really good friends said something to her that made her mad. She cleared the entire table with her hand.
All right.
All the glasses, all the plates, everywhere on the floor.
All right, now we have a party.
And the entire wedding stopped and looked at her, and then two of my really good guy friends ended up hog tying her, taking her from
hog tying her.
This is the best reception ever.
Wait, what was the photographer doing when his wife was being hog tied?
He was probably taking pictures of her. I don't even know. So he just ignored her, so they hog tied her by the hands and the feet, took her upstairs. She ended up sleeping in the photographer's car. She passed out for hours. And he just stayed and took pictures.
Oh,
that's fantastic.
It was crazy.
Fantastic.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to Jesse now. Jesse's on line three. This is the bride and the groom having a wedding day to remember and not the way they hoped. Hi, Jesse.
Hello. Yeah. On our wedding day, I ended up fainting during the ceremony.
You fainted?
And I guess, right in the middle of the Our Father.
Okay.
And then I guess from the nerves, my wife ended up throwing up on part of her dress.
Oh, that's the best. You two were destined to be together.
What a special day.
Luckily, it was part of the detachable train, so we were able to get rid of it for the reception. But then due to some bad business deals, part of my mom's family and my dad's family don't get along.
Right.
And then one of my wife's uncles got drunk and started riling up the two factions, trying to get a fight out of them. So,
all right.
We tried to corral him out of. We had to corral him out of the reception.
It. Hey Jesse, take me back to when you fainted. Were you unconscious for just a few seconds, and then you stood back up and went on with the ceremony, or did they have to stop the proceedings?
They stopped it and they sat me down and they gave me some water. It was like one of the hottest weekends of the summer. The cushion girls, that put the cushions on the kneelers, didn't turn them over, so I had beadwork cutting into my knees.
Nice.
We did the candle ceremony, and the candle wax made me nauseous.
Nice.
I love it.
The ascot tie I was wearing was a little too tight. So all these factors just kind of like compiled into me knocking out. And then I remember feeling these cold sweats, and then all of a sudden, I opened my eyes, and my dad's looking at me, and I'm like, oh, why is my dad here? And I'm like, oh shoot! I'm on the floor. How did this happen?
Oh, man.
Are you guys still married?
Yes, we're actually headed to our 15-year anniversary.
Wow!
How about that?
I never
would
have guessed.
Nope. It sounded like when you start off like that, what are the chances? But well done, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have time for one more?
Sure.
Should we take Mike real quick? Let's take Mike on line four. Hey, Mike. Thanks a lot for calling the Kevin and Bean Show. You get the final story: wedding disasters.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you. What happened at your wedding?
Oh, it started off with a limo driver getting mad at us because we wanted to go to a different place, and we almost got in a fight with him. But our wedding reception was at a country club with golf carts and stuff. And by the time that we got to the reception, the guests had already taken the golf carts. We're doing donuts out on the golf course.
Of course.
And
you can't leave golf carts around.
So, well, we warned them. We said, you have to lock these things up. Otherwise, they will get to them.
You warned the golf course that the people you were bringing were out of control?
Yes.
Love it. I love it.
They said, oh, no, they're locked up. I said, no, you don't understand. They will get to them, and they will get on them, and they will drive them. When we pulled in, they were driving them through the parking lots already. I was like, oh, this is not going to be good. This is not going to be good. And it just went downhill from there.
You got thrown out? Did you get kicked off?
Yeah, we did. We were supposed to go to, we had the place until 2 in the morning, and then they wound up shutting us down and cutting off the alcohol at like 11:30, and kicking us out at midnight.
I love it.
Some good friends.
Nothing like my wife sitting there crying in tears and stuff, and laughing.
Kicked out of your own wedding reception. That's a story.
Wait, you were laughing while your wife was crying?
No, we can laugh about it now, but before I was kind of like, what's going on here? You know, the wedding, you're too busy running around talking to people and having fun, and plates are getting broken, and things are, it was just pure accidental stuff. It wasn't anything malicious, it was just people having fun. And
love it.
It was just way too much for the country club, and they tried to tell us that we had did like $80,000 worth of damage to the golf course, and we're like, hey, we warned you. We told you they were going to take the golf cart.
How many stories have ended with, it was just people having fun, that was it, that's all that was going on?
And hey, we warned you. That should be enough.
Definitely. Awesome, Mike. Thanks for the call, dude.
Saved us. Yeah. Yeah, you guys have a good day.
Thank you. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. It's 8:38, and we finally came across a TV show that I think Bean might try out for.
Oh, you know, I'm not a guy to go out for reality TV, but when Ralph brought this up to us a few days ago on the Showbiz Beat, a show called Last Family on Earth coming to the Spike TV network, I said, I am so in. That is so me, an underground bunker that you can win. What? So we wanted to find out more about this. So we have Sami Aboud on the phone with us right now. Sami, do I have this right? You work in casting for this TV show?
That is correct.
Fantastic. LastFamilyCasting@gmail.com is the address. What kind of people are you looking for this show?
We're looking for pairs of people, first off. We're looking for immediate family members, husband and wife, father, son, mother, daughter, siblings.
All right, what does Bean do if he can't get his wife to go along with him?
Then he's got to talk to his brother or his son.
Nope, brother, nope. Son, nope.
Okay. Sorry, fiance. Bean.
Why are you looking for family members? Why are you going the amazing race route on this show?
Well, it's not necessarily amazing race route. I think Amazing Race does buddies and, you know, military partners and that sort of thing, too. Yeah.
But they look for people who know each other. I'm just why is it not an individual competition, I guess, is my question.
Well, I think, for one thing, the stakes are higher. You know, they're close to each other. There's someone you can depend upon. There's someone you can trust.
Sorry, Bean.
TV.
You being a loner and pissing everybody off doesn't help.
See, finally, it's come back to hobby. All right, what kinds of things will the contestants be doing on Last Family on Earth?
Well, I can't, unfortunately, talk about too many of the challenges, but I think the fun thing is that a lot of these challenges are going to be based around disaster scenarios. So we're talking about something based upon a tsunami or anarchy or something that could possibly threaten the world.
So you're going to kind of recreate that, and then these families have to show you what kind of skills they have to survive it?
Yeah, to some degree. Or maybe we'll teach them stuff and see how quickly they adapt. Adaptability is going to be a huge thing.
But wait, so you're going to get adaptable people who can survive, and you're going to give them a bunker? Don't the opposite people need the bunker?
No, you don't want to give a bunker to people who don't stand a chance of surviving. You want to give it to people who deserve a space in the shelter.
All right.
You know, people who can contribute something to a community after something huge. You know,
that's the point I was going to make is that, yeah, you're looking for the kind of person to repopulate the earth after after they can come back up from underground, right?
Exactly. I mean, you remember that movie with Morgan Freeman as the president?
Deep Impact. Yeah.
Right. And they had this huge list, and they're like, a number of people have been pre-selected to go underground. You got your top scientists and artists and doctors,
right,
farmers, people who know stuff.
And then breeders.
It's kind of like that. We want people who deserve a spot.
I'll tell you, DJs are not on that list.
Nope.
I'll tell you that.
That's very true.
We are not what you consider essential personnel.
I'd like to think that everyone has a little something to contribute. You know, people don't think about artists. Yeah, we need an artist down there. You need an artist. People think outside the box and actually bring something different to the world.
You need an expert in the English language like myself.
There you go. Kevin could teach the next generation of kids.
That's great.
This is Sami Aboud. We are talking to you on the Kevin DeBede Show. We're talking about Last Family on Earth. The deadline is fast approaching. You want to get your entry in by June 20th to appear on this show. It's going to be airing on Spike TV. What can you tell me about the prize? Tell me about this bunker that you win.
So the prize is, they call it a luxury underground shelter. And it's not your average, you know, dark metal cave. It's more like a cruise ship, really.
Okay.
In fact, if you go to the website, you look up terravivas.com, and you look at this thing, it's actually nicer than some of the apartments I've lived in L.A.
Sweet.
It's pretty impressive.
Now, does one family win, or are there more than one?
There's going to be one winner. A family can win a spot for up to six people.
But nice. But what I'm asking is, it holds more than that? There's going to be other people in there?
Oh, yeah. No, this is like a community shelter. I think everyone gets their own kind of pod. There's like a pod for each family and an individual sleeping area for each person.
Oh,
but in the end,
see.
You're going to survive down there with a huge group of people.
It's like an underground city that you live into that probably has its own power and its own water and everything like that, everything that you would need to wait it out.
Exactly. I think there's supplies and water that's supposed to last you for up to a year. It's actually pretty impressive.
Are you going to be able to cast this show, shoot the show, and air the show before the world ends in December?
Well, first of all, I don't really know if it's going to end on December 21st.
It's science, dude.
It's possible. It could end tomorrow or 5,000 years from now. As long as you believe that there's something big that could happen soon and you want to be prepared.
The polar shift. Have you not heard that? The polar shift.
Hey, there's lots of ways the world can end. Let's face it.
I've heard it.
Where is this underground shelter?
There's this company actually has a few of them throughout the U.S. I think they have them in Nebraska, Wyoming, Indiana.
Oh, all the good states. Fantastic.
Yeah, well, all the middle states. I don't know if you want them on the coast.
They're probably safer because they're in the middle of the country, but then you're living in the middle of the country.
Yeah, but you're living underground. What does it matter what state you're in if you're underground?
It doesn't really matter.
Because when you come up, eventually, you're going to have to travel for 75 years to get anywhere.
All right, Kevin.
If you want an underground bunker, like under the beach in California, that's probably not a good idea.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're setting yourself up for trouble. I love how Kevin is such a forward thinker. He's already past the world ending. He's already past living underground for 40 years. He's now worried about what he's going to do his first day back up. All right.
Well, the truth is, after the world ends, everywhere could be beachfront property.
That's true.
Yeah. This does sound like an awesome show, by the way. It is called Last Family on Earth. If it sounds like something you'd like to get involved in, they are now casting, looking for people. And the address again is lastfamilycasting@gmail.com. And for the rest of us, when is this going to air on Spike?
It's going to be airing this fall. And to go back to your last question, I think it's supposed to air up until a few weeks before December 21st.
Sure.
Oh, nice.
Because then they have to prepare it and get everybody down there.
Exactly.
Just in case something happens, absolutely.
Right.
All right, Sami, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it, man. Good luck with the show.
Thanks for having me.
And now, a moment with Bean.
As if he was doing the show, you know, they're in the Fear Factory to lure, like, young boys in.
That was a moment with Bean.
Talking about Rob Dyrdek in the Fear Factory.
Well,
really
when you're luring young boys in, it does become the Fear Factory,
see?
I'd like to point
you
out, by the way.
You didn't do it on purpose,
fear.
Though. You didn't do it on purpose, though, right?
No, of course not. Okay, I'm just saying. In retrospect, though, subliminally, the Fear Factory may have been more accurate.
Give it a six.
Welcome into the Kevin and Bean Show. It's 8:53. We're going to talk to a Kevin and Bean listener who had a fantastic encounter with Doto, the international man of mystery, that he is going to tell us all about coming up next. First, Rob's got the show this week.
Oh, are you still talking?
No, he's done.
Such exciting news. Such exciting news.
Really?
Bursting at the seams.
It
must be sci-fi. That's the only thing you're excited about.
Or could it be comic book related?
Yes.
Is this late-breaking, something that just happened, Ralph?
Well, it's news to me.
All right.
Rumor has it, and this is a very strong possibility, that Marvel isn't done taking our money for the Avengers movie yet. Hasn't made enough money, apparently.
What?
How about this summer a re-release of the Avengers with an extra half an hour of footage. The three-hour director's cut. The three-hour director's cut of The Avengers. I don't.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Woo!
I don't think I need.
Right, I'm with you. Woo! Yeah,
but I don't think I need another half
yeah,
hour.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We need it.
That's
yeah,
a long.
Yeah, let's do it.
That's a long movie.
But not if you've already paid enough to go see it, that's fine for the DVD. I mean, that'd be interesting, I guess, to watch.
Nope.
But you don't want to go
big
back
screen
to the theater to see it again.
Big screen, oh, big screen.
Why don't they take the slow half hour out of it and replace it with good half hour?
Why don't they make it 3 hours long and we go back and see it again?
I see.
That's all I'm
saying.
That's
the only option.
That's what I'm saying. Could be August. Could be this August on the big screen, the director's cut of The Avengers. An extra half an hour of footage. Moments we missed. Captain America looking up his long-lost love from 50 years ago.
That's happening.
What's she been up to?
Yeah,
that's the thing they had to cut out. They couldn't show you everything. How about that stuff? Yes,
are they
please. I say
titling it Avengers: The Cash Grab or anything like that.
No,
they have a name.
They're calling it The Avengers: Shut the F Up Beam. Oddly enough,
that is odd.
That is
if
odd.
If they name it that, I'll go see it for sure.
Oh, I'm so excited if that were to happen. Hey, while we're talking about movies, how about some tickets to see the movie Ted at an advanced screening that we're having at the AMC Burbank on Tuesday, June the 26th. An advanced screening of Ted, the new Seth MacFarlane movie. It's nothing but good.
Sounds great.
It is funny as hell, I'm telling you. Ted, of course, is the name of the teddy bear that comes to life for a little boy when he's 7 years old. John grows up with Ted as his best friend. And then we flash forward and they're both stoner losers sitting on the couch watching television.
Now take this in the spirit in which it's intended, Robert.
Oh, for God's
You're
sakes.
Not able to drag it down with your performance at the beginning, are you?
Just, I'm not even going to acknowledge that.
What is the spirit in which that question is intended?
Yeah, meanness. That's a good point, Bean. Thank you.
There's no way that I can drag it down.
All
no,
right.
There's no way. They become Thunder Buddies, you know.
What's Thunder Buddies?
Well, when you're a little kid and you're scared of thunder.
Oh, I
see.
You
have your best friend by your side to become Thunder Buddies. And the problem is, as they grow into middle age, they're still scared of thunder. So every time either of them hears thunder, they have to immediately run together and sing their Thunder Buddy song in order to keep from being fearful of the thunder. Here's a little taste of the Thunder Buddy song.
When you hear the sound of thunder, don't you get too scared. Just grab your Thunder Buddy and say these magic words. You thunder, you can suck my... You can't get me thunder because you're just God's farts.
That's right. You're just God's farts. That's why you can't get me thunder. Thunder Buddies!
Oh,
want to
awesome.
Go? Let's take the first three callers right now. 1-800-520-1067. First three callers get to go see Ted at our very special advanced screening.
With the movie's co-star Ralph Garman in attendance.
I will be attending. And yeah. I will greet you and I will say...
Doing a Q&A afterwards.
Nice to meet you. And I will do a Q&A about, about both my scenes. We can talk about both of them. Here's a couple who have finally discovered how to enjoy a Cirque du Soleil performance.
All right.
This couple was in Del Mar, California, not too far south of here, during a recent show on May the 27th, when several witnesses, including children, saw the woman performing oral sex on her friend while the show was going on in the audience.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I dare say the show in the audience may have been more entertaining than the show on stage.
Wow.
It gets better. Because the woman... who was the main witness who complained the loudest and reported the couple to security, was then beaten by the girl after the show.
What?
She waited for her. As she was leaving the venue, she saw the woman and her boyfriend standing at the exit, shadow boxing, with her boyfriend saying, "You can take her, you can take her." The woman... who is a military doctor, by the way, was pummeled about the temple, jaw, and head because apparently the couple didn't like the fact that she ratted them out to security that they were having oral sex in plain view of children while the show is going on. Wait, it gets better.
How?
The two, Kaylee Helwig and Gerald Torello, the couple in question, are both U.S. Border Patrol agents.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no. You mean were.
Not anymore.
Kaylee Helwig was cited for a misdemeanor citation for battery. Torello was detained for being drunk in public. However, they're still trying to find other witnesses who can corroborate the sexual charges before they can slap those on him. So That's some Cirque du Soleil right there.
No kidding.
That's what that is.
Wow. That's a, that story has everything.
It sure does. And I'm out of time. Damn. All right. More when we come back in an hour. 45 minutes. Today's celebrity birthday is Siegfried of Siegfried and Roy is 73 years old today. Malcolm McDowell is 69. Tim Allen, 59 years old today. Ali Sheedy turns 50. Rivers Cuomo of Weezer fame is 42. Steve-O from Jackass.
Yeah, dude.
He's 38 years old. Chris Evans is 31. Talked about the Avengers and its three-hour length that we need in theaters everywhere immediately. Ashley and Kate Olsen. Excuse me, Ashley and Mary Kate Olsen are 26, as is Kat Dennings of Two Broke Girls. I am Ralph Garman. I walk the show business.
That's just the thing. We can't put our finger on what's true about him and what's not true about him.
That's why Doto's the international man of mystery, Kevin.
I need some babe!
Kevin Bean, this one thing I forgot to tell you, Kevin Bean. I need a woman.
Woo! I need a woman! I was in Vietnam! I definitely need a Korean woman!
My first memory is I just love the buffets in Las Vegas. I love the flan. It has a lot of sugar.
Life's a box of chocolate, Bean.
Did you get her phone number?
Yeah.
Have you called it?
Yeah, I called and she changed her number.
How about that?
Why'd you tuck away some knives in a behind an air conditioner vent in a nondescript bag? No, seriously.
That's not mine, man.
I drink your milkshake.
Well, I don't, I'm sorry.
Why not, Bean? This is America.
And now the further adventures of Doto, international man of mystery, man. Yeah.
Why not, Bean? This is America, indeed. Producer Dave is working very hard to track down Doto. We understand he is back in the United States. How do we know that? Because Kevin and Bean listener Chris emailed us over the weekend to tell us that he had a Doto sighting in person. Chris, thank you for reaching out to us, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, thank you. One of the strange things about Doto is that, he wants to make it in showbiz, and B, we can never find him. Never. Like, he'll be in town, and Bean will email him, hey, we want to have you on the show. What time can we do it tomorrow? And he'll write back, I like flan. Like, there's no way to literally track him down most of the time, so we are living vicariously through Chris at this point, who met Doto at a party?
It was a meetup, like, cooking party.
A meetup cooking party. Now, I've never heard of this meetup thing.
Basically, what you do is you join these meetup groups, and they have different things you can do. Like, there's some that meet at bars, there's some that meet up to take tours of Long Beach.
So it's other people that have your interests.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so you guys were, what did you, were you at somebody's house, and everybody is like a potluck lunch or something? Everybody brings an item?
Yeah, exactly. And I was sitting in the living room. There was a knock at the door. I opened the door, and there's like an Asian man there. And I was like, hey, you know, nice to meet you. And he goes, oh, I'm Doto. And I was like, really? And he's like, does anyone here listen to Kevin and Bean? I was like, yeah, I listen to Kevin and Bean. He goes, do you still listen to Kevin and Bean? I was like, yeah, every morning. And he's all, I'm not like that anymore. I've changed. I'm not like that. Hey, seriously, I'm not like that anymore.
Okay,
and I'm
hold on.
Like,
hold on. Back up. So this meetup group is for people who like to cook?
Yes.
Okay, so he showed up to be part of the meetup group, or it was a random knock on the door?
No, apparently he is in the meetup group. There's quite a few people, and the girl who threw it, she knows him.
Really?
Oh, okay. Now, what did you think he was trying to distance himself from about previous appearances on the Kevin Bean Show? Like, why was he trying so hard to impress upon you as you first met him, hey, I'm not like the guy you've heard on the radio?
I have no idea. I mean, I remember a couple of the bits and stuff like that. And another thing he told me, though, oh, that was a real long time ago, you know, quite a few years ago. And I was like, I've only lived here for 5 years, and I've heard you on the radio.
This is funny, though, that he's really, really concerned. First off, like, he starts telling you, I'm not that guy, and you didn't even hear some of that stuff, probably.
Yeah, I was trying to put it together, like, is this the guy? I don't know. Are there two guys named Doto?
No, this is the guy. All right, so then you let him in.
So I let him in, and then I got called to the kitchen, and they were asking me some stuff. And then I went back out there, and he's all, again, he's like, hey, you know, I'm not that guy. I've changed. I'm different now. I'm like, okay.
Did you say, what are you talking about that guy specifically? Did you ask him for details?
Well, I was like, okay, well, what do you mean? He goes, I'm just not like that anymore. And I was like, okay, that's cool. You know, what'd you bring? He goes, oh, well, I brought the mushroom crepes. And I was like, oh, okay. So then I'm sitting there, and he comes in, and he starts talking to my friend Dean. He goes, hey, Dean, can I ask you a question? And, I mean, he just locks onto him. He's telling him about this girl that he's seeing on Facebook, and she posts all these weird things on Facebook, and he wants to know if he should still be with her. And my friend Steen like is like, okay, you know, well, like, what did she post? What did she, you know, post? He's all, well, she talks about her poops. She hears voices while she's pooping.
Wow.
She dreams of dying.
Back up. She hears voices while that's going on?
Yes.
Okay. Now,
sounds like a perfect match for Doto.
Now, let me ask you a different question. This is a group about cooking, right?
Yes.
Is everyone talking and this is just off in the corner, or has he dominated the conversation and now he's the focal point?
No, it is like he's a hunter. He's picking off one by one, cornering them in the middle, and like everyone, I look in their eyes and I can see like, is this guy for real? Oh my God, someone else come up and talk to me. And my friend
now,
Dean,
did anyone else... does anyone else listen to the show, or did they know who he was, or was he a complete stranger to most
of them? Nobody knew him. And later on, when I talked to my wife, I was like, oh, did you, you know, she's all, oh, did you meet Dew? And I was all, who's Dew? And she's all, the Asian guy. And I was like, no, that's Doto.
Yeah, his name is spelled D-I-E-U, so maybe that's why she thought it was Dew.
But what's interesting is that he was doing to the people at this party, Chris, exactly what he does to us when he comes in, and that's laser focus on you and ask you deeply intimate questions about what he should do with his life. He's always searching for answers with everybody he meets. I don't know that he ever takes anybody's advice. I think he just does whatever the hell he wants to.
That's the best part about him, is that he asks for advice, he gets good advice, and then he ignores it and goes on about his life.
Well, on top of that, like, he says he's seeing this girl. I bet he's never seen this girl. I bet they're just Facebook friends. But he creates a situation that doesn't even exist.
Oh, he's so great.
So did he go around the room and end up talking to everybody at the party?
Except for me. He wouldn't talk to me.
What?
No.
Why? Because you listened to the show and he thought you knew more about him then?
Yeah, and plus, when I saw him locking on to everyone in conversation, I was like, oh, no, I just have to make sure he's saying that. He had the same conversation with everyone and ended the conversation with, well, that's what my psychologist friend said, and, you know, you give good advice. We should hang out sometime. And then
so he would say that, and then he would move on to another person and have the same conversation about the Facebook woman with the poo?
He would get up and he would have, like, you know, something to eat, and then he'd look around the room, and then you see him see someone sit by themselves, and boom, he was on them. Same conversation. I would walk up and just kind of, you know, eavesdrop and hear that everyone had this same conversation.
Did anybody at any point say, this is a group of people who like cooking? Let's not talk about poo.
No, I mean, everyone there is really, really nice and thought that they were really trying to help him. And no one saw everyone was having the same conversation.
So
after a while, a few people were like, oh, hey, did you talk to that guy? And they're like, yeah, he told me about the girl on Facebook with the poo. He goes, oh, my God, me too.
Here's what I like about you, Chris. You're an evil bastard because you didn't warn everybody else.
The only person I did save was my wife, because as soon as he locked in, I was like, oh, no, it's time to go.
Awesome.
I told her, we've got to go. My friend John's waiting, which she knows is a lie. And when we get out front, she's all, oh, my God, because he was literally following her around the room trying to finish telling her the story.
Is my friend John waiting? Is that your code word for let's get out of here?
It is now. We talked about it after the party.
I love it. Well, Chris, I'm so glad that you wrote to us. I mean, look, I love Doto, and I'm not joking.
I enjoy
his company. I'm not trying to make fun of him here. I'm just fascinated with his life and with his methods. I mean, you had a Doto encounter in the wild, man. That's very, very exciting. And as I said when we brought you on, we are working very hard behind the scenes now that we know he's back in America and he's no longer Hong Kong, as he says. I'm hoping we'll be able to get him on the show maybe this week and find out what's new with him. But that's awesome that you met with him, dude. You should become Facebook friends with him so you can keep keep tabs on what he's got going on.
I don't know if he'll accept my friendship after I know him.
Tell him about your poop.
maybe that's the key that opens the door to Doto.
Thanks, Chris. Glad to talk to you, man.
Bye, Chris.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Imagine if we went away for summer vacation in a couple of weeks. Yeah. And we came back,
right?
And Muggs was gone.
What did I do?
If he was gone.
What
we
did
come
you
back
do? We were just talking
gone.
About what you did. Weren't we just talking about what you did?
We were off the air. Yes, we were. And he knows it.
Oh, that would be so sweet. And then we have some hot Asian chick who's running the controls in the studio.
What didn't you do is best. A better question.
You still on the I don't want him fired bandwagon, Kevin?
It's a tough bandwagon to be on, I'll tell you that.
A lot of bumps in that road as that wagon's going. A lot of potholes.
I'm barely hanging on.
It's like being a Kings fan in the late 90s, right? It's just tough to kind of be out there all by yourself.
Compared to that, because it paid off for Kevin. Holding on paid off. We need him to get
that's
off. Yeah. So it's like being a Mariners fan. Say something that he can get, he can understand why he needs to get off the bandwagon.
Yeah, there's no success at the end of that rainbow. All right, it's 9:40. Ralph is here. Time for our final look at the Showbiz Beat for a Wednesday Kevin and Bead Show.
See, here's why I don't like former President George H.W. Bush.
Why? He seems like such a nice man, especially now that he's retired and is just chilling in Maine.
He's just out of touch, man. He's out of touch with the common man.
This isn't Junior. This is his dad, right?
Right.
Okay.
This is Herbert Walker.
All right.
Out of touch with the common man. Doesn't know who Justin Bieber is.
He's 88 years old.
But everyone knows the Bieber.
I see that as a positive.
His granddaughter, Jenna Bush Hager, was interviewing him for the Today Show. How did she get that get? How did she land that interview?
Yeah.
I think they hired her just like, someday we'll get her to interview her grandfather.
Yeah. And now
then
she's
we
gone.
Can fire her. talking about his socks, because everyone's talking about the former president's socks.
What are you talking about?
Kevin, please.
I don't know anything about his socks.
Everyone talks about George Herbert Walker Bush's socks.
He showed up for his son's official portrait unveiling at the White House last week. You know, he was there to honor his boy, and he showed up in these ridiculous plaid socks that everybody took note of. They seemed a little out of character for, you know, such a stuffy guy on a stuffy occasion.
Now, here's the thing. Bieber's also known for his outlandish socks.
Oh, no.
So what do you do when you get two sock greats and you bring them together in one conversation? Let's find out.
So your socks have been making headlines.
Well, I like a colorful sock. I'm a sock man. This is a modest pair here today. Subdued, you might say.
And they've been comparing your socks to that of Justin Bieber.
Is he a sock man?
He evidently is a sock man just like you.
I don't know much about the Bieber. Never see him. I don't know what he does.
Have you ever heard his song?
No. How's it go?
Baby, 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 oh.
Is that his song?
You know it.
I don't think I'd like it.
I don't think you would either, Mr. President. Four more years.
That was before Clinton, right?
Yeah, he only had one term. He's still got one in him. Let's bring him back. What do you say?
I'd like it.
Let's bring back the 90-year-old sock man. Make him our president.
I'm a sock man.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Describes himself that way.
I'm a sock man. Sam and Dave. Good stuff.
I'm a bit of a sock man.
Lindsay Lohan. She keeps getting in trouble, but it looks like work continues to come her way. She's currently in conversations to star in a new film based on a book written by, actually the screenplay is written by controversial author Brett Easton Ellis. Brett Easton
Ellis. Less than Zero guy, right?
Less than Zero, American Psycho. He's written a lot of controversial books. He's written a screenplay called The Canyons, which promises to show the seedy underbelly of Los Angeles.
All right.
Lindsay Lohan apparently in talks to co-star with an actor named James Dean, D-E-E-N, who is actually a porn star. Oh, she's this much closer to doing porn. Now she's acting opposite a porn star, and then just one more small step before we all win.
Who knows the ugly side of Hollywood better than she does?
That's true. Who's living in the ugly side of Hollywood more than she is? James Dean is known as the Ryan Gosling of porn.
Okay.
Because he's very popular with the ladies. And mm-hmm. apparently he's a pretty good actor as well.
Lisa, you know him?
No.
James Dean?
Mm-hmm. No.
He will play the lead character, and she will play his girlfriend. This is all according to Brett Easton Ellis himself, who tweeted the fact that could not have dreamed of a better cast, he tweeted. I am beyond thrilled. It's being directed by Paul Schrader, by the way, who wrote Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and wrote and directed American Gigolo. So this is a surprise.
I don't like seeing Lindsay being involved in something legitimate.
This is a legitimate movie. But she is starring opposite a porn star, so it is a little bit of a novelty. We'll have to wait and see what goes on. Casting news. We have new casting for Mockingbird Lane, the reboot of the Munsters TV show. The old monster comedy from the 60s is coming back in a much more serious version on NBC. We've been following this closely because I was
you
a fan
were off
of the,
and then you were on, right?
I was a fan of the original, and I couldn't see how they could possibly reboot it. It's such a time capsule piece. I mean, it really belongs to the 60s. I said, there's no way you can do that. But more and more great people get involved.
Hmm.
First of all, you got the guy who did Pushing Daisies, Brian Fuller. He's going to be the showrunner for this thing, which is already a great pedigree. Eddie Izzard has signed on to play Grandpa Munster. Jerry O'Connell will be playing Herman Munster. And now today we find out that Portia de Rossi will be Lily Munster in the new show. And people are saying,
interesting,
you're going to like this. So now I got to give it a half a chance. Just half a chance.
Only half.
Just a half a chance. From Craigslist, I want to give everyone a heads up who can do this. You might want to make a little cash for yourself. Animal trainer Samantha Martin is placing an ad on Craigslist asking for someone to build her a tiny gong for her cat.
A what?
A gong. A giant, round piece of brass that you strike with a mallet.
Like a cymbal, only way bigger?
Yes.
Okay, for what?
That's a gong
for
right
what?
There. For her cat.
But why?
Who she has trained to hit a gong, but she needs a cat-sized gong.
Why has she?
Because, Kevin, she has a cat band. She claims she has two cat guitarists, two cat drummers, and a cat keyboard player. There are also... No, not you. No, not you, keyboard,
not keyboard cat.
It's a different cat. He says there are also guest appearances by a chicken who plays the tambourine.
What is happening?
But now she needs a tiny cat gong for one of her cat percussionists for her band.
Okay, but isn't a tiny
answer her ad on Craigslist.
Gong, isn't that really just a cymbal? Can't you just buy a cymbal?
Well, no, you've seen a gong. You know what a gong is, right?
But it's roughly the same. A
cat
size.
It hangs from like a frame or two ends.
It's
not on a stand like a cymbal is.
I'm saying
it. It's got to be a cat. It's got to be this big. It's got to be a cat sized gong. What's wrong with you? Someone get me a cat right now. I'm going to show Kevin.
Nope.
That's kind of what your head in mind is what the band sounds like.
Where's the cat band?
This is annoying.
Maybe we should call Cat Daddy and see if he knows anything.
I don't think we need any of that at all.
And more casting news. This is great news. I've been telling you that Dexter's seventh season seems to be set in the seedy underbelly world of strip clubs and the Russian mob. We know that so far. Well, just added to the cast today is Yvonne Strahovski from Chuck fame.
Oh, nice. That's what I'm talking about.
Played, of course, Sarah Walker on Chuck. She will be joining the cast of Dexter. No word on exactly who she is, but apparently she's being described as a strong, sexy, independent force of nature who has a shaky past she's trying to put behind her until she meets Dexter.
Love it.
I guess I'll be hanging out with Yvonne Strahovski at Comic-Con this year.
Do you need me to help?
No, I'm good.
You
thanks.
In any way?
No, I'm fine.
You said you're really busy.
Oh, I think I got this handled. I think I got it pretty much handled.
You need one to get your coffee?
Nope, I'm good.
All right.
Because I do the Dexter panel each year, and they always bring out the guest stars, and we get to hang out. So Yvonne and I will probably, be doing stuff. After.
You mean
afterwards.
Talking on a stage in front of people?
That's no, but afterwards, we'll be doing stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, she'll be going to wherever she goes,
no,
and
we'll
be going right where you go.
We'll get coffee or a cocktail or something. Right. Maybe catch a Smashing Pumpkins concert. The Pumpkins are in the news. Billy Corgan is starting a feud with Radiohead fans. Apparently someone tweeted, I guess the exact quote was, Smashing Pumpkins more relevant than Radiohead, writes no one ever, was the tweet. And he came back with, I'll pee on effing Radiohead because of all this pomposity, he said. So apparently he's no fan, and people are not happy with him. Do I belong in a conversation about the best artists in the world? My answer is yes, I do, Billy tells Rolling Stone magazine.
My answer is no, you don't.
Yeah, no.
Did he say that in 1994?
No, he said it in 2010, actually.
Oh, well, that makes a difference.
It does make a difference.
Wow.
So, I'll pee on effing Radiohead.
First of all, I'd like to see that. But second of all, why would he delve into that problem?
I have no idea why he wants to start things with those people. Today's celebrity birthdays. Siegfried of Siegfried and Roy is 74 years old today. Actor Malcolm McDowell, currently seen on Franklin and Bash. He's good on that show, too. He was on Entourage, too.
Good,
he played Sloane's father. Remember
on
that? Great on that show. 69 years old today. Tim Allen, 59. Ally Sheedy turns 50. Rivers Cuomo of Weezer, 42 years old. Steve-O from Jackass.
Yeah, dude.
38 years old. Chris Evans, our Captain America, is 31. The Olsen twins, Ashley and Mary-Kate, are 26. And Kat Dennings, also 26 today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. Tomorrow morning, an all-new Kevin and Bean show. We've got tickets for a preview screening of Ted.
Yay!
With a game that you'll have to earn them. We also have Mike Catherwood in studio telling us about his dating show that he's on now.
Okay.
The Choice.
I think they're pretty much going to have to edit out everything he says.
Oh, come on.
That's the problem.
Much like when he was on this program.
That's correct, yeah. And also Dr. Drew on tomorrow morning's Kevin and Bean show. We'll see you.